Entertaining programs. This is the IE America Radio Network.
This is Mike Malloy, and so here we are. 2 years have passed since a terrorist attack on U.S. soil left more than 3,000 people dead, U.S. citizens and citizens from dozens of other nations. During these 2 years, we and the world have waited for a full and factual investigation by the Bush administration, on whose watch this horrific crime occurred. We continue to wait. Not only has the Bush administration failed to conduct an official inquiry into this massacre, it has also attempted, successfully so far, to impede, delay, and ultimately halt any attempt to unravel the awful truths of September 11, 2001. We must ask why this administration has worked so long and so hard to kill any search for the truth. We must ask why phone calls were made by the highest-ranking Bush administration officials, George Bush and Dick Cheney, to Democratic congressional leaders demanding that any investigation be conducted on nothing more than a superficial level. We must ask why the FBI was used by the Bush administration to intimidate Democratic members of Congress. These members had the temerity to suggest publicly that cooperation was not being provided by the country's intelligence-gathering organizations, that, in fact, Congress was even being denied the simplest information needed for its, at best, cursory and incomplete attempt to get to the truth of 911. We must ask why renegade FBI agents, in other words, agents who refused to participate in the code of silence imposed by Attorney General John Ashcroft, why those agents were reassigned, censured, or otherwise disciplined for attempting to expose the criminal incompetence of the U.S. security and intelligence communities under the control of the Bush administration. We must ask why investigations prior to the awful events of September 11th, investigations into potential terrorist acts such as flying jetliners into densely occupied office buildings, were stopped by the Bush administration. We must ask why the rulers of Saudi Arabia, business partners of the Bush family, and the chief exporters of militant Islam were declared by the Bush administration to be off limits in any comprehensive investigation into the financing of global terrorism of the sort that resulted in the destruction of the Twin Trade Towers in New York City on September 11, 2001. We must ask why members of the extended Bin Laden family, also business partners of the Bush family, were allowed to leave the U.S. shortly after the bombing on 9/11, yet without being questioned by the FBI or other U.S. investigators. This was at a time when less important Arab speakers and people from the Middle East were being swept up in a law enforcement net spread across the U.S. and jailed. We must ask why the U.S. Air Defense System, a multi-billion-dollar system put in place specifically to guard against air attacks against us, had been ordered to stand down on September 11, 2001. We must ask why there was no response from the U.S. military when it became clear this nation was under attack. We must ask who issued those orders to stand down and why. We must ask why it was necessary immediately after 9/11 to pass federal legislation that, in effect, ended constitutional protections provided by the First, Fourth, Fifth, Eighth, and Tenth Amendments. We must ask why we were told by the highest law enforcement officer in the U.S., John Ashcroft, that any questions regarding these changes in domestic law by the public at large or members of Congress would be just short of an act of treason. We must ask why the Bush administration ordered an attack, both unlawful and against the demands of the global community, against two countries that provided not one of the bombers who committed mass murder in this country on September 11, 2001. We must ask why the country that did provide 15 of the 19 killers, Saudi Arabia, was spared the so-called shock and awe of U.S. military might. We must ask why Iraq, why Afghanistan. We must ask why the Bush administration, 2 years after that day of death and destruction, continues to participate in the covering up, the hiding, and the destruction of the facts regarding its failure of leadership that led directly to the awful events of September 11th. This failure of leadership, or worse, participation, active or passive, in the events leading to and following the attack on this country constitutes the greatest failure in this country's history. And if we are to consider this country, our country, to have even a minimal moral center, we must ask why the frustration, the pain, and yes, the agony of the families of those killed on September 11th, 2001, the sons and daughters, the wives and husbands, the mothers and fathers, why their pain does not register with, nor matter to, the Bush administration. I am reasonably certain that on the third anniversary of the awful and immoral and criminal events of September 11th, 2001, these questions still will not have been answered. I'm Mike Malloy.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
And we're playing all your favorites, but right now I have a pair of free tickets to tonight's big concert for the third caller. Oh, let's go to the phone lines. They are heating up, and let's see. Hello.
Hello.
Is this Ms. Shannon Johnson?
Yes, yes it is.
Oh, you sound very excited.
I am.
Well, Ms. Johnson, I have good news.
I'm the third caller.
No, I just saved a load of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
And welcome to the program. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting live coast-to-coast on terrestrial radio stations from the depths of outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, Stream 145, and on three different web stations, radiopower.org, ieamericaradio.com, and live365.com, with archives of the program, a three-week archive of the program that you can listen to anytime, day or night, at www.whiterosesociety.org. All of these you can find off the website tomhartmanshow.com, or just tomhartman.com will link you to it. Also from there you can find a link to our chat room, where we already have an interesting conversation in progress. Today is, of course, 9/11. It is the second anniversary of the day that the chickens came home to roost, some would suggest. And I know that those on the most paranoid fringe of the right would say, "Oh my God, it's blame America first." No. Any nation that cannot introspectively look at its own successes and failures, that cannot examine its own behaviors, is a nation that is doomed. And this nation, in my opinion, is not doomed. Even though there are loud voices on the extreme right who squeal every time somebody says, "Well, let's look into this. Might this have had something to do with it? Who dropped the ball here? What's going on?" Yeah, sure. And the slogan, you know, these slogan is like the slogan to shut people up. Rumsfeld the other day, and before him Ashcroft. "Oh, if you question America, you help the terrorists." Or now it's if you question our policies, you're helping the guys in Iraq who are killing our soldiers. Nobody wants to do that, obviously, of course. Of course not. But democracy is founded on the core principle. You know, Teddy Roosevelt said, "This is the height of patriotism to question your leaders in the United States." So today, in some part, in the 3 hours of this program, I want to raise some of these questions and share with you some of the background. But beyond that, I think, frankly, there is a larger issue here, and it's one I'm personally more interested in healing situations than accusing evildoers. And although I think that both need to be done, and we're going to touch on both. In our second hour, we're going to be interviewing a woman whose son is in Iraq right now about the situation in Iraq and its relationship to 9/11 and its relationship to this administration and to all the profiteering that is going on. In our third hour, we're going to be interviewing the mother of a young man who died as a firefighter in the World Trade Center on 9/11. And in this first hour, I wanted to share with you some thoughts on what's really going on here. Throughout the 3 hours, I'm going to be coming back periodically to various questions that have been unanswered and that have been raised. Although Mike Malloy did such a marvelous job there at the opening of the show that it would be kind of redundant to just launch into them right now. So I'm going to sprinkle them through the 3 hours as time goes on. But the first point that I want to make, and I think it's an important one, is today is 9/11, the anniversary of the attack in New York City on the United States of America. It's also the 30th anniversary of the coup d'etat that left President Allende. Remember, you know, don't cry for me, Argentina. That left President Allende dead in Argentina. This was a coup put together by the CIA, organized by Richard Nixon and Secretary of State and National Security Advisor Henry Kissinger. And this isn't wacky conspiracy theory. This is like in the encyclopedia. You know, this is just out there. Nixon and Kissinger helped, and the CIA helped put together a coup to overthrow Allende because he was talking about nationalizing some of the businesses. He was talking about having liberal social policies. Now, as you know, I do not agree with nationalizing businesses. I do agree, however, that the commons should be the property of we the people. Allende believed that as well. And although Allende was way to the left of me, I'm not here to defend him or accuse him. The point is that, it was about a year ago. Actually, just about a year ago this time was the last time I was in Argentina. I was in capital city? I'm having one of those senior moments. Anyway, and Argentina, of course, is not Chile, but both of these countries, I've not been to Chile, both of these countries have suffered tremendously as a consequence of our interventions there. And today is the 30th anniversary of the bloody CIA-backed military coup led by General Augusto Pinochet that led to the death of at least 3,000 Chileans. I mean, this guy was accused, remember when he was in London and in hiding and in a military arrest for crimes against his people? We put him there. And 50 years ago, not 50 years ago today, but 50 years ago, August 25th, 50 years ago, a week or so ago, a couple of weeks ago, the CIA overthrew Mohammad Mossadegh, who was the leader then, leader of Iran, and installed the Shah of Iran. And this was done in large part because Mossadegh in 1951 had nationalized the oil in Iran. He said, hey, this oil is ours. And prior to that time, the oil had been controlled by the Anglo-Iranian Oil Company, later known as British Petroleum, but also with deals with various American oil companies. But Britain primarily was behind this coup d'etat, it seems, that although the CIA did participate in this. And so this overthrowing of Mossadegh in 1953 in Iran had a whole domino series of consequences, much as the murder of Allende in Chile did in terms of South America. But in the Middle East, the consequences had have come home, as they say, that it led to a type of repression that led to a type of religious fanaticism that led to, ultimately, 9/11. Through not just Iran, obviously, but throughout the entire region. This entire region was just inflamed 50 years ago by this situation. Now, in the week, I think it was a week and a half, about a week after 9/11, 2 years ago today and 1 week, I was contacted by a publisher, by Rodale, which is a publisher interesting. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. Ed in Dayton, Ohio is on the line. Hey, Ed, what's up?
Hello. I just wanted to mention, I think you accidentally said Argentina a minute ago when you were talking about Allende and instead of Chile.
Yeah.
But the main point that I wanted to make about that is that I know you said you're opposed to nationalizing businesses, but I think
just
there
for the sake of nationalizing them, I am in favor of nationalizing businesses that have to do with the commons, like water supplies and
or
defense.
If it's the major mineral wealth of a country, which in Chile was copper, and it was all being exploited by Anaconda Copper, which is a North American company. And the reason that that there was the overthrow of Allende was because he was threatening to nationalize the copper industry, and that's why they put Pinochet in there, because they thought he'd be more friendly to multinational corporate interests, which he was for a while until it led to the whole country melting down. And then he nationalized the copper industry toward the end of his reign of terror in Chile.
Great.
And he didn't pay anything for it either. He just took it.
Yeah, great. And thank you for setting me straight on that. So go ahead. Char, is he still there? Ed? Oh, we lost Ed. Okay. I don't know what happened. Anyhow, thank you, Ed. I appreciate that, and thanks for organizing that information. The point that I wanted to make is that I think that there's a larger issue here. I know that there's a larger issue here. And I started to say, 2 years ago, I was contacted by this publisher, Rodale, and they were putting together a book, you know, one of these instant books. There were a whole bunch of instant books that came out literally 4 and 5 weeks after 9/11. And this was one of them. And it was titled, it's still in print. You can find it in bookstores. It's on the web. It's on, you know, on Amazon and whatnot. It's called From the Ashes, A Spiritual Response to the Attack on America. And they had gotten the Pope to write something, and they had something from Billy Graham, and they had the Dalai Lama and Desmond Tutu and Thich Nhat Hanh and a whole bunch of them, a whole bunch of folks. And in fact, I want to share some little pieces from that with you during the course of this hour. But they asked me if I would contribute a chapter to this book, and I did. I wrote a chapter for it, and there's if you go to the message board today, it's been on my website for 2 years. There's a link to that particular chapter that I wrote, and what I suggested was that that one of the arguments that is being made. In fact, let me just frame this with our question for the hour. Our question for the hour: does 9/11 represent a battle of civilizations, a battle of religions, or is it a battle of the 11th century against the 21st century? Now, let me explain. A lot of people are saying that what this is about, what 9/11 was about ultimately, was Islam versus the rest of us, or Islam versus Judeo-Christian, the worldview, civilization, whatever. And it's easy to think of it in those terms. In fact, bin Laden himself, in some ways, suggests that that's what it's about. But I'm suggesting that it's actually much larger than that. And when we understand what it's really about, then the possible solutions emerge. And those of you who have been listening to this program for some time know that I'm always far more interested in what the solutions are than simply whipping somebody upside the head and saying, you're done wrong. Although, you know, I'm perfectly willing to point fingers where it's appropriate, but I think that the important thing is, what is the issue and what is the solution? And when we understand what was really behind 9/11, what really provoked this, and how the core of what produced 9/11 is also producing similar responses in the United States of America right now that have led to a 9/11 type of reaction over in Iraq, and then now we got blowback and the cycle is starting. What is the real issue here? What is the real battle that's going on? I'll tell you right after this break. Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network.
All right. right, folks, while we have a minute, let's go up to the chopper with Brad Paul, get a traffic update. Brad, what do you see up there?
Well, thanks a lot, Scott. Nothing you're going to want to hear about, unfortunately. You can expect major delays on the interstate. An overturned tractor trailer has got traffic backed up for about 25 miles. It's a real bad situation, Scott, but I do have good news.
What's that, Brad?
I just saved a load of money on car insurance by switching to GEICO.
See how much you could save. Visit GEICO.com. GEICO. 15 minutes online could save you 15% on car insurance.
Remember that scholarship you were hoping for to help pay for your son's college?
Hey, Bill, your kid's running the wrong way.
Well, I wouldn't count on it. But there is something you can count on. We're College Loan Corporation, a company dedicated to helping you finance or refinance your college education with interest rates as low as 2.63%. Just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE today and find out how you can take advantage of the lowest interest rates in 40 years. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
Boy, I remember the good old days.
Yeah, when was that?
2003, of course, when interest rates were at historic lows and we knew the economy was turning around. What an historic opportunity. We really jumped on it. How'd you do?
Well,
we needed to expand our manufacturing and warehousing, so we called General Steel Corporation and ordered buildings engineered for our area and to meet our needs. And with the stucco and rock products provided by the General, our buildings look great.
How will you look back at this historic opportunity? Small business owners know that now is the best time to build that new warehouse, manufacturing, or retail space. Whether you need a 60 by 200 foot building for under $50,000 or a 100 by 175 for under $98,000, call toll-free 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need to expand your business, you need the General. If your church or school needs to build quickly and save money, you need the General. Call 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need space, you need the General. Call 1-866-96-STEEL today.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into Tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Prepare to be astonished!
Okay, so just what is going on here, people?
Did you know that you can get the best of Progressive Talk Radio on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145?
Oh, really?
Well, that's remarkable.
Monday through Friday on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145 is loaded with political talk radio from the other side.
Hurrah!
Kick it off your morning with Doug Steffens' Good Day from 5 a.m. till noon Eastern Time, followed by the Tom Hartman Show from noon to 3 p.m. Then get different perspectives from different show hosts on Radio Free Speed Zone from 3 to 5 p.m.
Yeah, okay, that sounds good.
Family Talk with Dr. Mike Riera then takes the reins from 5 p.m. till 7, followed by All American Talk Radio from 7 p.m. till 9. Then get ready to fire up your night with the Mike Malloy Show from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time, all live Monday through Friday on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145, powered by the only progressive talk radio network, i.e. America Radio Network.
So what do you want, a medal?
Well, isn't that special?
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
We saw the plane on the other side of the building, and there was smoke everywhere.
In a series of deliberate and deadly terrorist acts.
I saw people jumping out of off the building.
The victims were in airplanes.
All of a sudden, I see a jet crash into the first tower.
Or in their offices.
It collapsed. The top floors collapsed down.
Thousands of lives were suddenly ended by evil, despicable acts of terror.
I saw it blow and then ran like hell.
September 11th, 2001. You will remember this day as long as you live.
When your day is long, and the night,
an accident when we heard there was a second.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the iAmerica Radio Network. Gandhi once noted, wrote Bishop Desmond Tutu in From the Ashes, Gandhi once noted that an eye for an eye leaves the world blind. Leaders can influence the mood of their people. They can make them vengeful or conciliatory. They can pander to their baser instincts, or they can hold out a vision of the sublime, of the noble, of the idealistic. Violence provokes more violence and really solves nothing, as they seem to be finding in the Middle East, in Northern Ireland, in Sri Lanka. I would say to Osama bin Laden, wrote Bishop Desmond Tutu, 1 week after 9/11, I would say to Osama bin Laden, remember you are a child of God and behave like one. And I would say to President Bush, remember you are a child of God and behave like one. The point that I started out before the break was, well, in fact, let me just nail this down with this speech. This speech was given on November 27th by the Pope. Now, it's not the current Pope. I'll explain in just a moment. And I quote, the noble race of Franks, this was a speech he gave in the southern part of France, and the Franks or French and Germans, the noble race of Franks must come to the aid of their fellow Christians of the East. The infidel Turks are advancing into the heart of Eastern Christendom. Christians are being oppressed and attacked. Churches and holy places are being defiled. Jerusalem is groaning under the Saracen yoke. The Holy Sepulchre is in Muslim hands and has been turned into a mosque. The Franks must stop their internal wars and squabbles. Let them go instead against the infidel and fight a righteous war. God himself will lead them, for they will be doing his work. There will be absolution and remission of sins for all who die in the service of Christ in this war. Here they are poor and miserable sinners. There in heaven they will be rich and happy. Let none hesitate. They must march next summer. God wills it. Dies wollt. This speech was given by Pope Urban on November 27, 1095. This was the speech that initiated the Crusades. Now, again, I know some of you think that you know where I'm going with this, and he's going, oh, no, he's saying that this is the response to the Crusades. No, I'm not. The point is that in the 11th century, when one religion took when the Muslims took the holy sites of the Christians, and things weren't going all that well in Europe, the Pope whipped up the Christians to go kick the butts of the Muslims. And what he promised was that if Christians died in the service of killing Muslims, they would immediately go to heaven and all their sins would be forgiven. You just heard the speech. Does this sound familiar? And he said all of the different nations, all the different Christian nations needed to unite and go fight the Muslims and the Arabs and the Muslims in the Middle East. This was the beginning of the Crusades. This was the worldview of the 11th century. What I'm suggesting is that when Osama bin Laden and his buddies attacked the United States on November 11th, 2 years ago, they were still operating out of the worldview of the 11th century. And we were then faced with the choice. Do we respond in an 11th century way, or do we respond in a 21st century way? Now, what would that mean? This is Tom Hartman, the Democracy Zone, here on IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm John Hamilton.
A large coalition involving some 80 human rights groups published a report on Colombia Monday. In it, they accused the Colombian government of moving away from democratic principles and toward authoritarian rule. The examples cited include the military's tacit backing of some right-wing paramilitary death squads who've been implicated in the murder of hundreds of trade unionists. Colombia's president, Alvaro Uribe, immediately denounced the accusations, going so far as to directly tie the coalition behind the report to terrorism. Human rights workers in Colombia now believe the president's remarks may give the right-wing paramilitaries more justification for targeting them as well. 17 human rights workers were killed in Colombia last year.
A Bush administration plan to roll back the 40-hour work week was dealt a serious blow in the Senate yesterday. Senators narrowly adopted an amendment that blocks plans by the Labor Department to reclassify millions of workers as exempt from overtime pay. Democrat Tom Harkin of Iowa sponsored the amendment. The Economic Policy Institute estimates the Labor Department's proposal would spell an end to time-and-a-half pay for a net 8 million Americans, people like Carol Bragg of Gaithersburg, Maryland. She's a cardiac care nurse who says that U.S. nurses, on average, put in more than 300 hours of overtime per year.
Without overtime protections, employers could demand us to work long, hard hours.
The fight over the 40-hour work week now heads to the House of Representatives, which narrowly defeated a measure similar to the Harkin Amendment earlier in the summer.
Striking workers at Yale are digging in for the long haul. They're getting $100 raises in their weekly strike pay, up from $150 to $250 a week, thanks to donations from community groups, churches, and Yale students and faculty.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Animal Talk. Not your father's radio show about animals.
Welcome to the lifestyles of the wet and stinky. We're looking at fishy fat cats and wealthy crustaceans. This is Bloodsucking Leech here, sending you algae-covered wishes and caviar-laying dreams.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
All right, boys, come on.
Hi, this is Bobby Likas, host of Bobby Likas Car Clinic, inviting you to join me Saturday mornings from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern here on IE America Radio Network. People love to talk cars, and local sponsors know that. But IE America Radio has other shows as well. Shows that your listeners will love, that will attract local sponsors, and shows that will set your station above the rest. Go to IEAmericaRadio.com and take a look and listen for yourself to see what's available. That's IEAmericaRadio.com.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Everybody hurts.
This is a very difficult time for all of us.
Sometimes. It was surreal. As we looked at it, we thought it was something out of a movie. It just didn't seem real.
Sometimes everything is wrong.
Terrorism against our nation will not stand. May God bless the victims, their families, and America.
We're dealing with a wide range of emotions out here.
There's much that is not known about what has happened.
It's just an incredible sight. They had a lot of emergency workers around the building. And, of course, everybody's hoping that these people were able to get out of there without being injured.
Today, we want to express our deepest sorrow for the victims, their families, friends, and colleagues. This is a time for national unity. In the state of Iowa, we are monitoring the situation closely. We are taking steps in the state to ensure the safety of all of our citizens.
The city of New York and the United States of America is much stronger than any group of barbaric terrorists.
Everybody heard.
I asked the American
for the American people, Thich Nhat Hanh said. For the American people, this is from the book From the Ashes. For the American people, I would suggest that we do everything we can to Thich Nhat Hanh, the famous Buddhist monk, everything we can to restore our calm and our lucidity before responding to this situation. He wrote this 4 days after 9/11. To respond too quickly before we have much understanding of the situation may be very dangerous. The first thing we can do is cool the flames of anger and hatred that are so strong in us. Now, Thich Nhat Hanh, it was from Vietnam, And he said, when we learned of the bombing of the Bun Tra village in Vietnam, where 300,000 homes were destroyed and at least that many people killed by American bombers, and the pilots told journalists that they had destroyed the village in order to save it, I was shocked and racked with anger and grief. We practice walking calmly and gently on the earth to bring back our calm mind and peaceful heart. Although it is very challenging to maintain our openness in that moment, it is crucial that we not respond in any way until we have calmness and clarity with which to see the reality of the situation. We knew that to respond with violence and hatred would only damage ourselves and those around us. We still have the 11th century worldview here in the United States. Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson, right after 9/11, said the wrath of their God, who had lifted the veil and allowed the terrorists to act because of their God's anger over homosexuals, liberals, and the ACLU, tells me that their God is not my God. It's this is a pure reflection of the 11th century worldview. There are Christians out there today who are still willing to commit mass murder. Timothy McVeigh, who claimed Christianity. The abortion murderers who claim Christianity. This is the 11th century worldview. But there is a 21st century worldview that we can bring to this, and I think it's very important that we come to it. In the meantime, if you have a comment or thought on this, or if you would like to speak your thoughts about 9/11 and your experiences relating to this, feel free to call. Our number is 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. And Will in Atlanta is on the line. Will, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. You are on the air.
Thanks, Tom. The words of that monk were great. I think clarity is what's called for. And to me, it is clear that this was a Reichstag fire redux. There's no way, given what we know for a fact about the information that was available, John Ashcroft had forsworn flying commercial airliners for more than a month prior to 9/11. We know Willie Brown, the mayor of San Francisco, was warned by his head of security not to fly that morning to Washington. Yeah. There's just too much information. The experts were saying they were doing this, and there's with the FBI agents in Arizona and Minnesota, we know that there were political activities preventing law enforcement from bringing to justice the people who were planning this event.
Well, and on August 6th, 1 month before, George Bush received a briefing, according to CBS News, in which he was told explicitly that Osama bin Laden was organizing a hijack of airplanes to attack cities in the northeastern United States. He had been previously told that the targets would be in lower Manhattan and Washington, D.C. And what did he do? He went on vacation. He took the longest vacation in the history of the United States presidency and went to Texas. And then when he went to Florida, his brother put the entire state on security alert. And John Ashcroft stopped flying. A bunch of Pentagon meeting that was supposed to happen on 9/11, they called it off. I mean, yeah, there was... The point that you were going to make, I'm sorry, Will, you had something you were going to say there.
Well, the point, and there was also a mass casualty exercise scheduled for that day at the Pentagon, and coincidentally to simulate an airliner flying into the Pentagon. For that day, for September 11th, as well as the Northeast Corridor, NORAD, and FAA were on high alert for a training exercise. They were overstaffed. They were completely manned, and you see that they were total unresponsiveness to allow this to happen. And Mindy Kleinberg, in her testimony, a widow of 9/11, Kenneth Fitzgerald Broker was her husband, outlined it very articulately in the first 9/11 commission hearing. My point is that Bush and his Nazi affiliates that are down from Nixon and Bush one, whose father was Hitler's banker for a fact, these people represent the same interests that Urban 11 or Pope Urban was hearkening to, and his, it's called the Black Aristocracy. The same families, the same Etruscan clans have lived in the same castles on the same hills in Europe for 2,000 and 3,000 years. I know some of these people. I grew up in the D.C. area, and people out in the country don't realize this is going on because they didn't go to Harvard or West Point or elite schools to meet these people who are supporting this vicious anti, what Jefferson referred to as the engine for enslaving mankind, the true antichrist. Yeah. If you don't know these people, you just go through your life blithely of being grateful to be an American and having an opportunity to not be actually in shackles and behind bars. I
understand what you're saying, and I agree with much of it. It's interesting. My friend of mine, Scott Berg, and I were writing a book on the history of the religion of the Nazis, and we were in Vienna, Austria, and we had an evening meeting with Prince Alfred von Liechtenstein, the King of Liechtenstein, and I asked him some questions about these kinds of issues, and the response that I got was very deferred. It was not a denial. It was not it was very royal. It was the first time I'd ever sat with somebody who literally was a member of one of these ancient royal families and had this conversation. And I was actually very impressed by this man. But I was also, but it was clear that these were not questions that this was the first time he had heard about. But I'm not willing to go all the way on this conspiracy theory thing. I appreciate your call and thank you for sharing that with us. But I'm not convinced that I think that it's entirely probable that this could have been, in fact, a certainty that this could have been prevented. This was, for the Clinton administration, contrary to the right-wing spin that's being put out there, this was the top. In fact, they were ridiculed by the Republicans for being obsessed with bin Laden during the last 3 years of the Clinton administration. And every time Bill Clinton tried to do something about it, they would attack his sex life, or they would attack him for saying that he was trying to wag the dog. Remember all those always trying to wag the dog attacks? You know, when he was going after bin Laden in Somalia, and on it went. So I think that this could have been prevented, and I think that they probably had some foreknowledge of broadly something was up. But I just can't go to the place where I think that any of these people really had anything to do with it. It's just too bizarre. But anyhow, 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937, and Jenny in Santa Fe is on the line. Oh, I'm sorry. I've got Billy in Santa Cruz is on the line. I'm reading my screen here wrong. Oh, Jenny hung up. Hey, Billy, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Tom, you're always so in control and sensible, whereas I'm always so angry. And I wanted to talk about why I'm angry a little bit and get your response. You know, as you were talking about not sharing the 11th century God that Falwell and Robertson and all those people share, you know, let's talk about the character of people who would prefer that sort of thing. And isn't it the exact same as the character of the Americans who still love George Bush, who, in other words, what is it about the character of people that are, they're so afraid, they're so in need of a father figure, whether it's God or Bush or, you know, whoever the leader is, or Adolf Hitler, where even when a leader is so horrible, whether it's Yasser Arafat or George Bush, what is it about us that we don't rebel?
I think it's a basic human need, Billy. I really do. I think that religion is grounded in a basic human need, and I think it's ultimately probably a positive one when it's used appropriately. I think that, in my own experience, the mystical experience, the experience of feeling like you're in the presence of God, and for many people, they don't express it that way. A lot of people would say, standing on the edge of the Grand Canyon, they get this incredible feeling of awe.
And
their father figure is nature, right? But I think that all of us, in one way or another, and I'm sure you do in your life, have some way of connecting with something greater within us, and that there are people out there who play on that and who prey on that, and Adolf Hitler was one of them, and I would say demagogues right across the board play on that natural and normal human need to connect with something greater than they are.
But the fact is that these days, it seems to me that instead of being 21st century men of modernity and science, we seem to be going further back. You know, we live in America.
No, we are not, Billy. There are some among us who are, and their voices are very loud, but they are very much
in the
minority.
Their voices are very loud if they can take the most powerful position in the world and turn it over to a religious nut. You know, I just heard somebody mixing I'm Proud to Be an American, that old song, which is so stirring, and with George Bush talking, reading one of the Psalms, and I will go through the valley of the shadow of death. And, you know, what I got out of this is such a hate for religious people, for Falwell, for America, to still believe
and Billy,
in God.
Billy, as soon as you start...
Buildings
Billy,
get knocked
Billy.
Down.
Wait a second, Billy. When you start hating those folks, you become them.
He hates America. And I don't
Billy,
think that he does.
Billy, listen to me for a minute. When you start hating those people, you become them.
I mean, yeah, I understand that. And yet, I understand that without my level of hatred, those people will win the day. You know,
no.
George Bush did get elected because hate radio, because Republican hate radio exists and it's
George Bush did not get elected, Billy. George Bush did not get elected. He lost the election. He got a he was 500,000 fewer votes than Al Gore, 2.9 million votes fewer than Al Gore.
It shouldn't have been that close. It shouldn't have been that close. Right?
Well, yeah, I don't know. I think that he won by won. The votes that he got, I think he got by deceit. A lot of people believed his shuck and jive about conservatives.
By not honoring America's process. Absolutely.
Yeah, he talked a good line. And,
yes,
and he hasn't followed through on it.
In other words, I could be...
But my point
I'm
is, Billy, listen to this for just a second. Just listen and consider this for just a minute. You say, if you don't hate them, that they're going to take over. Do you think that Martin Luther King ended segregation in the United States effectively? I mean, I think we can all acknowledge what he did, or that Gandhi if ended the British rule in India out of hate?
Here's my answer. That while maybe Gandhi and Martin Luther King didn't hate them, people like me did enough to stop the bigotry and the racism. It does take honest resentment, distrust. In other words, when I look at a religious person, be they Muslim or Christian, at this point, or for that matter, a person who supports Bush, I have such disgust for them. I cannot respect their opinion. All I do is think of them as some sort of lesser form of life, because that's exactly what they are. They're cruel. They're stupid. And ultimately, you know, remember David Pearl?
You mean Richard?
Remember that? Where they made this guy say, I'm a Jew, my father is a Jew, and then they cut off his head?
Yeah.
You know, I'm at the point now where the next time, you know, this PLO is telling Israel, well, you know what, we're going to start attacking your homes, we're going to start attacking your apartment buildings, and I think Israel should turn around and use all the weapons they have and start just having a real war with these people, not let it be terrorism, and just kill them like crazy, because there's no living with these people. As Bin Laden says, our children want to die as much as yours want to live.
Okay. Thank you, Billy, for your comments. I appreciate that. I have to say, let me tell you where that's going to go. In 1099, Raymond of Agiles, the medieval historian, who was there in Jerusalem in 1099 during the Crusades, wrote back and said, and I quote, this is the story of what was going on. He said, some of our men cut off the heads of the enemies, others shot them with arrows so that they fell from the towers, others tortured them longer by casting them into the flames. Piles of heads, hands, and feet were to be seen in the streets of the city. It was necessary to pick one's way over the bodies of the men and horses. But these were small matters compared to what happened at the Temple of Solomon, a place where religious services were ordinarily chanted. What happened there, if I tell the truth, it will exceed your powers of belief. So let it suffice to say this much at least, that in the temple and portico of Solomon, men rode in blood up to their knees and bridle reins. This is the 11th century worldview. And Billy, you're still there. And I think you need to come into the 21st century. There are more appropriate and healthy ways to resolve conflict than everybody pulling out all their weapons and killing each other. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Bob in Texas has a comment. Bob, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. You're on the air.
I take exception to what this last caller was talking about, the PLO and Yasser Arafat.
Mm-hmm.
PLO is just trying to liberate the Palestinian people from this Israeli aggression and everything. They never did nothing to the Israelis. It was the Germans that did something to them. And they turn around and be just as bad or worse to the Palestinians as the Germans did to them.
Yeah, well, I think you're vastly oversimplifying, Bob, your point is noted. Thanks for the call. I appreciate that. 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. Nikki in Alabama is on the line.
Yes,
hey, Nikki.
I agree with you, and Billy is just so wrong. Hate is not the answer. It's understanding. We have to understand them. If we don't understand what they're saying and we don't know what they're saying, then we can't combat that. And I do, you know, agree that we have to know what they're saying and what's going on, but hate is not the answer.
Yeah, thank you, Nikki.
Thank you.
Thanks for your comment. I appreciate that. So then the question is, what is the answer? What do we do? What would be the 21st century response to this? I mean, we still see the 11th century being lived out here in the United States. In Saudi Arabia, women are still veiled and forbidden to work or drive. In Pakistan, girls can't go to school. Osama bin Laden cited the Christian crusades against Islam as part of his justification for the terrorist act. He still thinks he's fighting an 11th century war. We'll get back to this when we come right back. This is Tom Hartman on IE. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
The people who brought you the weekend, Michigan's unions, invite you to Labor Fest, a party for working families and our communities. Come to Ford Field, downtown Detroit, this Saturday, September 13th, noon to 6. It's free admission and includes tries for Guinness World Records, the world's largest picnic, and the world's largest postcard. Your kids can have an NFL player experience, enjoy marching bands, meet sports celebrities, and we have $5 Tiger tickets. Join us this Saturday, September 13th, free admission at the Detroit Lions Ford Field for the world's largest labor picnic.
For more info, go to miaflcio.org.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where a victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better, and he's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places. A ray of hope in these dark days and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
This is Mike Malloy. Another year has passed since the attacks against us on September 11th, 2001. Another year and still the refusal of the Bush administration to investigate the massacre of 3,000 people on U.S. soil. Another year of killing authorized by the Bush administration of civilians in two countries who had absolutely nothing to do with the terrorism conducted against us. Another year marking the absolute failure of leadership of the Bush administration. How much longer until we, the citizens of this country, say enough? I'm Mike Malloy.
Doug, listening to you sing Back in the Saddle again just goes to show what happens when Nancy isn't around to rein you in. God help us and anyone else listening in at that time. I think that was very nice. I'm back in the saddle again.
There's a certain pumpkin patch charm to you when you do this.
Really?
Well, doggy.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio program, take 48.
Tune in to Animal Talk this Sunday for Animal Celebrity Boxing.
Boxing kicks butt.
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
Yeah, what a cat.
And that dog on ice, Tanya Harding.
Yeah, that dog will fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on IE America Radio Network.
Sunday.
The Mike Malloy Show.
Who's on the newsmaker line? George W.?
I thought maybe you could ask me some of them questions.
Oh, okay. In the past, it appeared that Kucinich supported the global gag rule that you have enforced. What's your position on that?
Vice President Cheney assures me that the gag rule is very important in case I say something stupid.
Oh. What do you have in mind for the Middle East and the situation in the Korean Peninsula?
Gonna kill him.
You're going to kill him.
Okay. I'm going to kill him.
Are you interested in an in-depth inquiry into the missing weapons of mass destruction?
Weapons of mass production are there. We found two trailers. Now, my daddy has an Airstream, so I know about trailers.
Yeah.
And if they roll over on a little car or something, there's a lot of destruction there.
Yeah, I see. Okay,
if they flip over in those desert winds.
Yeah.
The Mike Molloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Oh, beautiful, heroes proved in liberating strife.
In our chat room here, we've got a fascinating conversation going on about what does hate mean? What is hate? And some folks saying, well, I hate George Bush. Others, well, I'm just angry with him. And it's I want to make this very clear. Hate, in my vocabulary, is something that debilitates the hater. Anger is something that motivates the angry. I am very angry about George Bush and the things that he is doing to America. I'm very angry about the fact that he is taking money from my children and grandchildren to give to his rich buddies, that he's fouling the air with poisons, that he's charging off on these wars that are making the Carlyle Group rich and the rest of us poor, and that are harming the prospects for peace in the Middle East. I'm very angry about those things. But in my life, I have found that hate harms me. If I hate, it harms me more than anybody else, and I'm just not going to go there. And I really don't think any of us should. It doesn't serve things. Hate drives people to kill other people or to call for the death of other people, which in many cases is almost the same because the call always precedes the doing. Anger can produce change. I encourage righteous anger. And the point that I was making is that the Protestant Reformation shook Christianity to its roots, and the Enlightenment and the Renaissance transformed both Judaism and Christianity and brought them into the modern era. And then Jefferson, Madison, Franklin in the 18th century, this is the most critical change, creating the United States of America, a secular democracy, a nation grounded in strong moral principles but not attached to a specific idea of this is the only way that anybody should worship. That in the First Amendment said clearly, anybody, you know, the Congress shall make no law regarding religion. And this brought us out of the 11th century. Whereas in the Middle East, we still have all these countries living in the 11th century, and the way to bring them out is with ideas. There is a battle between the 11th and the 21st century, but it's not a battle that will be won with bombs, threats, or intimidation, no matter how high-tech they may be. These are the tools of the 11th century. Instead, America and the free world must hold our archetypal vision of freedom, individual liberty, and religious tolerance, and change the world with ideas instead of bombs. And we can do it. We have done it in the past. That is the point that I wanted to make this hour. Thanks for listening so far. Stay tuned after the news. We'll be right back. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network.
But it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. It seems some of you are still listening to that Mike Molloy person at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Many chronic Molloy listeners have found it helpful to repeatedly snap a little rubber band against the soft flesh of their wrists when they feel the un-American urge to turn on the Mike Molloy Show. The pain is only temporary, but it is nothing compared to the everlasting furnaces of brimstone hell you will experience if you continue listening to the Mike Molloy Show. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Molloy Show, just say no.
Who says
Mike Malloy is rational and, you know, I mean, whatever.
You want me fired, too?
I mean, I hate the guy. And
you hate me?
True.
You hate me?
Why not put something on that says he's a great goof liberal?
Goof?
Yeah, I just can't believe it.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network.
Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. Today, of course, on the second anniversary of the September 11th attacks, New York Governor George Pataki is trying to reassure family members their loved ones killed that day 2 years ago will not be forgotten as the rebuilding process moves forward. War from correspondent Lisa Romanello.
As soon as he arrived for the ceremony, Governor Pataki was approached by a woman who lost her firefighter son. She urged him to preserve the Twin Towers footprints. Pataki says he'll do his best.
We're going to do everything we can to preserve the footprint. We have to support the slurry wall. We have to support, ultimately, the memorial that will be constructed at the site. But there will be no commerce. There will be no retail. There will be no offices over those footprints. We'll do everything we can to protect it.
Pataki says this beautiful September day reminds him of the sunshine 2 years ago, before darkness fell. He says he has a tremendous sense of sadness for the families. Lisa Romanello at Ground Zero in New York.
Bells also rang out today over Somerset County, Pennsylvania, to remember the men and women who were killed when United Flight 93 crashed in a field. Reporter Brent Wiggum was there.
The small town of Shanksville, Pennsylvania, stood still at 10:06 today, the exact time Flight 93 plunged into an empty field here 2 years ago. At that time today, about a mile from the crash site at the Flight 93 Memorial Chapel, Reverend Mascherino read the names of the 40 victims and rang the thunder bell once for each life lost. Reverend Mascherino says if the wind's just right, you can hear the bell at the crash site up the road. In Shanksville, Pennsylvania, I'm Brent Wiggum reporting.
UN Secretary General Kofi Annan says international cooperation is vital to the success of the fight against terrorism. Annan told reporters he was in New York when the World Trade Center was destroyed and knows what a traumatic and tragic incident it was. He said last month's bombing of the UN Baghdad headquarters and yesterday's fatal stabbing of the foreign minister of Sweden show terrorism hasn't been defeated yet. Annan's in Geneva for talks with the chiefs of the UN's humanitarian agencies and other organizations about future operations in Iraq.
Okay, so I'm a teenager, right? And everyone's so quick to judge me. On the outside, I may look like... But on the inside, I'm all... Just because I look like... Doesn't mean I act that way. In fact, I'm actually involved in crime prevention. That sounds more like this. It's really a great way to convince adults that while you may be looking, you're really thinking.
Call 1-800-722-TEENS to find out how to make your community a safer place for everyone. Get involved. Get the number and call. 1-800-722-TEENS. A public service message from the Crime Prevention Coalition of America, the U.S. Department of Justice, and the Ad Council.
France, Germany, and Russia are offering the U.S. a compromise deal on the Iraq situation. The deal would allow America to be in charge of all international troops in exchange for the U.S. handing over all civilian control to Iraqis and the United Nations. Secretary of State Colin Powell immediately dismissed the idea of any quick exchange of power in Iraq. Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon is back in Israel today to deal with the latest suicide bombings there this week. Sharon is expected to consider increasing Israeli retaliation for the two suicide attacks on Tuesday that killed 15 people.
All right, folks, while we have a minute, let's go up to the chopper with Brad Paul, get a traffic update. Brad, what do you see up there?
Well, thanks a lot, Scott. Nothing you're going to want to hear about, unfortunately. You can expect major delays on the interstate. An overturned tractor trailer's got traffic backed up for about 25 miles. It's a real bad situation, Scott, but I do have good news.
What's that, Brad?
I just saved a load of money on car insurance by switching to GEICO.
See how much you could save. Visit GEICO.com. GEICO. 15 minutes online could save you 15% on car insurance.
The United States and its allies are working to get Russia and South Africa to back a U.N. resolution on Iran's nuclear energy program. The resolution would give Tehran until the end of October to prove it has no secret weapons program. More from Middle East correspondent Roxana Saberi.
Diplomats from France and Germany have been holding closed-door talks with countries on the International Atomic Energy Agency's Board of Governors. They're trying to get them to support a resolution giving Iran a final chance to show it's complying with its nuclear obligations. Iran says it has been complying. If the board finds that it has not been, Tehran could face economic sanctions. Diplomats have said it's important to have Moscow support any resolution passed by the board. Russia has been helping Tehran to build a nuclear power plant in the south of Iran. Roxana Saberi, Tehran.
An activist committed suicide yesterday during a violent protest at the World Trade Organization meeting in Cancun. Reporters say the South Korean man climbed onto a security fence, waved a banner reading WTO kills farmers. He then stabbed himself in the chest. I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Name some things that are different. Apples, oranges, men, women, football, soccer. How about tune-ups? If you think they're all the same, think again. And when I come back, I'll tell you all about it.
Okay, so you want one good reason to get LoJack installed in your car. Well, unfortunately, I can't give you that. But I can give you three. LoJack has a 90% recovery success rate. LoJack has helped recover over 100,000 vehicles worldwide. And LoJack is the only stolen vehicle recovery system used by the police. So if you still want just one good reason to get LoJack, that last one should do quite nicely. To find a dealer near you, visit LoJack.com. And keep it close.
Why does your tune-up cost $500, but your neighbor's only $100? Apples and oranges. Although symptoms in two vehicles are similar, actual problems can vary dramatically. Here's what I mean. Your neighbor's V8 engine is running on 7 cylinders due to a bad plug wire. Tune-up cost, $100. Your V8 engine's also running on 7 cylinders, but it's due to a burned valve. Tune-up cost, 5 times $100. My advice? Investigate the diagnosis before you relegate your wallet. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Been written about in the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, and Pravda. He spent time with the Pope and the Dalai Lama. And now you can talk with Tom Hartman simply by calling 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, broadcasting live coast to coast on the IE America Radio Network. This is the Tom Hartman Program. You are in the Democracy Zone. On September 20th, 2001... just a couple of weeks after 9/11, the most inclusive religious statement ever released. And you know, we don't normally deal with religion on this show, but this was signed by the National Council of Churches, the Reformed Church of America, Ecumenicals for Social Action, which is in conjunction with Christian, Jewish, Muslim, and Buddhist clergy, 2,800 signatories, the Religious Center, Action Center for Reform Judaism. Was signed and submitted to every member of Congress. This was a seminal document, and they said, and I quote, "The terrorists have offered us a stark view of the world they would create, where the remedy to every human grievance and injustice is a resort to the random and cowardly violence of revenge, even against the most innocent. But we can deny them their victory by refusing to submit to a world created in their image. My concern is that we are helping create a world in their image. We have been doing this in Iraq. I'm still of two minds about Afghanistan, but certainly Iraq. This is the whole thing of saying Iraq had anything to do with 9/11 has been completely refuted, even though over 60% of Americans continue to believe it, because our president continues to give speeches in which he talks about 9/11 and then Iraq, and though he's legally correct, like I suppose Bill Clinton was when he correctly defined what the word is, he's legally correct when he says, quack, 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 9/11, and then somewhere else in the speech says, quack, 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 Saddam Hussein. But people, you know, it clicks in people's heads and they go, oh, there must be a connection here, even though he doesn't make the connection overtly in his speech. And so more than half of Americans think that one of the pilots on there, more than one of the participants in the 9/11 hijackings were Iraqis, or that Saddam Hussein was behind it, or that he funded it. None of it is true. In fact, it's been thoroughly demonstrated that he had nothing to do with that. In fact, he was the enemy of Osama bin Laden. So anyhow, is the incompetence of the Bush-Cheney-Rumsfeld regime endangering our soldiers as well as our peace? Jerry Reed is a member of Military Families Speak Out, which is part of the Bring Them Home Now campaign. Her son has been in Iraq since day one of the invasion, and we're very honored to have Jerry here on the Tom Hartman program. Jerry, welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning. Tell us about what's going on in Iraq right now. What is your son and what are his peers reporting to you about what it's like on the ground there?
Well, I'll be honest. I get more information from the news. My son, throughout the war, luckily I've been able to have good communications with him, better than many parents. He basically always wants to assure us that he's all right. My own opinion is that many of the young people over there are very strong and resilient. They are trying their best to cope mentally with what's happening. But I'll tell you, I'll call him up and he'll tell me that everything's okay, everything's fine there. But, you know, he's right now at the Abu Ghraib prison, which, as you may know, was attacked by mortar fire, killing several prisoners and injuring many more a few weeks ago. And I talked to him the morning after that happened, and he reported that everything was just fine there. So I know that everything's not fine. He happens to be in one of the most dangerous areas of Iraq right now. And, in fact, they just don't leave the prison. And he, although we don't hear about all the attacks on the news here, he's from just conversations with him, I was led to believe that they are regularly attacked. Generally, these are small attacks that don't cause much damage. They had brought in tanks to guard the prison, and I had spoke with him a week before this attack happened, and he had felt more secure that they'd come up with ways to stop the attacks, and then a very serious mortar attack, which killed prisoners. That was one of the things that was making him feel safe was, well, he doesn't think they're going to attack the prison because of all the Iraqi prisoners who were there, and that just turned out to be not true.
Yeah.
The soldiers are incredibly nervous. Most of them really are finding ways to mentally cope. I personally think they just don't process what's happening to them, and they try to keep their minds on other things. Unfortunately, and this is just in his own small company, I'm not sure how many soldiers are actually in that whole company, but the commander's wife sent out a message. This was to the other wives, and Cody's wife shared it with me just last week, mentioning that just during the month of June, so this doesn't cover any time since then, when things have gotten much worse, there were 5 reported suicide attempts in that company. So not all soldiers are faring as well as my son. Certainly a lot of them are just breaking down. They're just in a position that right now they're there to defend themselves. I mean, that's what they believe they're there for. Many of them are sitting around with no mission. I communicate with many other parents and wives, other people whose loved ones are in Iraq. There are a lot of engineers who are in Iraq right now. These are the people who are supposed to be helping to rebuild Iraq. I mean, they're engineers. They're not combat personnel. Most of them, you know, they describe their daily activities as watching movies, taking a shower if they have a shower available where they are, writing letters. They just don't have a mission. They're holed up in whatever places that they can secure and defending themselves against attacks. And that's my opinion of what's happening in Iraq right now.
So it seems that the rebuilding isn't actually getting done because it's just too dangerous to get out there and do it?
I personally think that the Bush administration and all of its workers in Iraq have shown themselves that they are just too incompetent to figure out a way to rebuild Iraq. Even as soon as it became safe to bring humanitarian aid into Iraq, I watched on the news the administrators they had in Basra, and I have 4 children. I certainly just kept thinking about all those babies in Basra that did not have clean water or food. and were under warlike conditions, and all of those mothers who were trying to take care of them, and then watching the administrator at that time load all of the humanitarian aid into warehouses to sit there until they could come up with a bureaucracy and decide how they wanted to distribute it. I think that if there was a real commitment, an organization is not even just a commitment. They have shown that they just don't know what they're doing.
Jerry, this administration has said that one of the ways to solve so many of the problems and to save money and to do things more efficiently, like Grover Norquist loves to tell us, is to privatize government functions. We shouldn't have the government running the Postal Service. We shouldn't have the government providing supplies to soldiers.
Halliburton is running all of these services right now.
So what's the experience been with this privatization?
They're contracted out. This has been something that people don't hear about on the news, but there's like this bizarre subculture of military families that share information, and eventually we come up with what's going on. I think this has been reported recently that a lot of these services are not being provided by the government. They're being contracted out. Halliburton, I don't know if Halliburton has all of these contracts, but somebody's making money off of this. They're importing workers from low-wage countries so that they don't have to pay them even as much as the soldiers who wouldn't really make much more would make. And they have responsibility for supplies and for mail. And both of these issues, they haven't been getting food and water. A lot of people became aware of this. Certainly the parents became aware of this a long time before. I would say maybe 3 months ago, Cody began asking me not for snacks or doodads, but for substantial food. Well, he's been in the Army 3 years. I know what Army mothers are supposed to send to their sons. We're supposed to send them cookies. I don't send him cookies. I pack as much packets of tuna, cans of sardines, whatever substantial food I can fit into boxes and send them to him, and I've been supplying him with extra food for about 3 months. They also, some people are sending water. And unfortunately, many parents, the way they've responded is, well, they don't have water and they don't have food, so we're going to come up, there's even projects to raise money to ship large amounts of bottled water to soldiers in Iraq.
Because Halliburton is failing to supply them.
That's my opinion. At first, I couldn't figure out what was going on. This is not supposed to be a war zone, the Army seemed unable to provide enough food and water to the soldiers. I couldn't really get to the bottom of it because, of course, it's just hearsay. It's just communication among parents. There have been so many reports. I mean, it's a joke. It's a very ugly joke, but, we'd like to total up the combined amount of weight all of the soldiers over there have lost, but I've heard reports of anywhere between 20 and 50 pounds, and these are healthy young men. There's something going on. The water situation, I think this has been quite publicized, that they just don't have enough water. They do have water. They believe that the water's unsafe, and there has been absolutely widespread illnesses, dysentery-like illnesses connected with food or water. The soldiers don't really know. I mean, what's the culprit here? It's impossible to tell. That was why Cody originally asked me for food, because he said everybody was sick. They were trying to only eat the MREs, and they wanted food that they knew was safe. They were trying to prevent themselves from getting these illnesses.
Jerry, I read an article recently that suggested that one of the reasons why Halliburton and some of the other contractors were not supplying the soldiers in a timely fashion was because their insurance rates had gone up 300 to 400%. I believe this is in the Wall Street Journal. I shared it with my listeners a couple of weeks ago when it came out. And therefore, the contractors were saying, hey, this isn't profitable for us anymore. We're backing out. And that, the point, of course, being that if this was a government agency, they would simply do it. But the private corporations were saying, we want more money if you really want us to do
this. This is an excellent point, and I can tell you, I don't know. I've not been able to figure out enough about how food and water is supplied. I know that in some places Halliburton is running the mess halls, and those are the places where they're probably getting better food. But where this subject really comes up, now, where my son is the Sunni Triangle. He receives his mail, as do many other support personnel engineers. He's not a combat.
Got about 20 seconds here, Jerry.
He's not a combat soldier. Once he got moved to the prison, he didn't receive mail for like a month and a half or 2 months, and we couldn't figure out what was going on. As it turns out, Halliburton was supposed to deliver the mail. They weren't delivering it because their insurance wouldn't cover civilian soldiers driving the roads where all the attacks are happening. And the soldiers were told.
Amazing, Jerry, hold that thought, and I want to continue with you with this after this break. But we have to pay a few bills here, Jerry. If you can hold the line, we're talking to Jerry Reed, a member of Military Families Speak Out. This is Tom Hartman on IE. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Boy, I can't believe I didn't do it. I really missed the boat. Interest rates were at historic lows. I knew the economy was turning around. I could have called General Steel and saved a ton of money on the building I needed, and I'd be ready for the new economy. Yep, I really blew it.
Will this be you? Perhaps a year from now. Let General Steel Corporation show you how to take advantage of this unique moment in history. A steel building from the General will save you time and money compared to conventional construction. And you can hold your building delivery for up to 1 year with a small deposit. Small business owners know that now is the best time to build and prepare for the new economy. Whether you need a 60 by 200 foot building for under $15,000 or 100 by 175 for under $98,000, call toll free 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need manufacturing or warehouse space, you need the General. If your church or school needs to expand quickly and save money, you need the General. Call 1-866-96-STEEL. This moment in history won't last forever. Call 1-866-96-STEEL today.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
It's September 11th. Do you know where John Ashcroft is? 2 years after Al-Qaeda's assault on America, 2 years after the Bush-Cheney-Ashcroft axis of absurdity has spent untold billions of our tax dollars to lock down America, do you feel safer or do you feel taken? Personally, it's not foreign terrorists who scare me. Yes, they can do some bodily harm to us, but they can't take our liberties from us. They can't militarize our society. They can't dim the light of America's democratic beacon. They can't force our people into imperialistic wars to make the world safe for Halliburton. They can't change the essential principles of liberty, justice, and egalitarianism that undergird our nation. But our leaders can, and they are. What scares me are the homegrown zealots now in high office who are using a veil of patriotism to impose a police state mentality on our land of the free. The Bushites have had 2 years to work their will, and it's now time for us to speak bluntly. These people are nuts. They're also dangerous. They've shoved us into an undefined and endless war, blindsided us with the Scurrilous Patriot Act, opened everything from our bank accounts to our library records to their Orwellian prying, perverted the priorities of our public spending, and insisted that they can operate in secrecy and above the law, all in the name of stopping terrorism, which they've actually made a greater threat to us than ever. This is Jim Hightower saying, the emperor has no clothes. In fact, he's buck naked and butt ugly, and we can no longer be silent in the face of what adds up to a wholesale assault on the true America. Sam Adams, the leader of the Sons of Liberty and the Boston Tea Party, alerted us to this danger a couple of centuries ago. If ever a time should come when vain and aspiring men shall possess the highest seats in government, our country will stand in need of experienced patriots to prevent its ruin. Now is that time.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
$1,000 a plate dinners that raised $1 million. This is from Jim Hightower's book. George Bush looked out at the group of folks there and he said, "This is an impressive crowd. The haves and the have-mores. Some call you the elite. I call you my base." End quote. George W. And we're talking with Jerry Reed, a member of Military Families Speak Out, whose son has been in Iraq since day one of the invasion. And we have lost Jerry for just a moment here on the telephone, the eternal hiccups of the telephone company. Ah, she's back. Great. Jerry, you were just telling us, let me get this straight now. Your son and the other soldiers have to run the gauntlet of a road one at a time or in small groups, have to run the gauntlet of a road where the local nationalists and the Saddamists and the jihadists and everybody else are shooting at our soldiers and attacking them in order to get their mail, because Halliburton has said that driving a single truck carrying everybody's mail along that road is too dangerous. It has raised their insurance prices and they're not profitable doing it. So they're making your son come and get his own mail, even if it means driving a long distance over dangerous roads.
Yes. That's exactly what we found out, because at first I didn't realize. I thought the Army wasn't delivering the mail, and to be truthful, I preferred that nobody drive those roads to bring the mail, but it's so important to the soldiers that they're going to go get it. But yes, that's exactly what's happening. I don't know how many people this affects. I know those people who are out and around in the countryside in the cities of Ramadi, Fallujah, where Cody is at Abu Ghraib, they get their mail at Balad. There's a big support base there, and when we send him mail, that's where it gets delivered. He hasn't run into this problem before, and in fact, mail service before he was where he is now. And all of those soldiers, face
You mean before when the government was providing the mail service?
I have no idea. I mean, we just found this out a couple weeks ago. Found out that this is why they weren't getting mail delivery. At first, nobody was really saying anything. Cody didn't know why he didn't get mail. He said he thinks it's probably just too dangerous to bring it. But he was there. There were boxes and boxes of stuff we'd sent sitting there, including, he spent his 21st birthday sitting there without the little things we managed to send him just to cheer him up, because it was sitting at Balad. I don't know if they're taking it to the Baghdad airport, which is very close to him, and then sending it to Balad and making them drive up to get it or what. But, some of these attacks that you hear about along those roads, those are soldiers driving to get their mail. I know of at least one attack where that was true. Another member of Military Family Speak Out, her husband is an engineer based in Fallujah, and on one of their trips to get the mail in Balad, their convoy was attacked, and a 19-year-old was killed during that attack.
And this was to save Halliburton,
luckily, her husband wasn't wounded, but other people were also wounded.
And this was to save Halliburton because of their insurance expense. Yeah, I mean, if the Army was responsible for delivering the mail, they'd put it in a tank if they had to get it out. Has been a big part of it.
I think they would find some way to do it. I mean, it would make more sense to me. They're not paying these people anything. When they talk about civilian jobs, well, maybe some people in America think, oh, that means good paying jobs for Americans. But no, I know even like the operators, when we're able to call him, we go through the switch in Camp Doha in Kuwait.
Yeah. Yeah, Jerry, hang on. We'll come back. This is just a short break, just a minute or two, and we'll come back and we'll let you finish your story. And I want to hear more about military families speak out. This is Tom Hartman, The Vast Radical Middle Conspiracy. Stay tuned.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
The wine industry tries to switch from cork to plastic, and the change could affect farmers and forests. I'm Jill Ladwig for Earthwatch Radio. Some people say a glass of wine is good for your health, and others say the cork in the bottle is good for the environment. They say the use of real cork from trees along the Mediterranean is a great example of sustainable forestry, but this practice might be in jeopardy. Cork is harvested from the bark of oak trees that grow in the Mediterranean region of Europe and northern Africa. The trees regenerate this layer of bark so people can harvest cork on a regular basis. This harvest also offers an economic incentive to protect wooded areas that are home to a rare European wildcat. Beatrix Richards is the European Policy Officer of the World Wildlife Fund. She's concerned that some winemakers now use plastic corks and other synthetic stoppers. She says that when cork harvesters lose the market for their product, they chop down their trees to plant more profitable crops. Richards says winemakers were concerned about a form of contamination from natural cork that gives wine a stale, musty quality. But she says they're starting to return to natural cork. She says an industry survey found problems with tainted wine in just a tiny fraction of the bottles that were sampled. And she says many consumers simply prefer the natural product.
There are overwhelming figures to show that consumers in the U.S. and globally prefer real cork to synthetic stoppers. Also, consumers are actually pretty well-informed people, and they realize that by buying real cork, they're benefiting an extremely valuable natural habitat and also a traditional way of life.
Richard says the cork harvest is a great example of sustainable forestry, and she'd like to see it continue. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. It seems that some of our otherwise upstanding citizens are listening to the Mike Malloy Show at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Surely you can find a more patriotic and productive use of your evening hours. For example, organizing neighborhood watch parties to search for the terrorists who are certain to be lurking in your playgrounds and possibly hiding dangerous weapons of mass destruction in your victory gardens. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Is the incompetence of the Bush-Cheney-Rumsfeld regime and their radical religion of conservative religion of privatization endangering our soldiers as well as our peace. This is Tom Hartman, and we are talking with Jerry Reed, a member of Military Families Speak Out, whose son has been in Iraq since day one of the invasion. And Jerry, I want to get to your thoughts and your organization's thoughts on Bush's $87 billion request, on what moved you to join Bring Them Home Now, or Military Families Speak Out, rather, about the Bring Them Home Now campaign and how people can find you on the Internet. I also, however, we have a call on the line. I also want to take some callers here. We've got Ben in Elgin, Illinois, who has called 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. And Ben, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hey, Ben.
You know, I've been a student of war fighting all my life. I'm a military war gamer. I've got an entire library full of books on tactics and military discipline. And the one thing that I know about military morale and the maintenance of military morale is that communications from home are absolutely vital.
Yeah.
And I am shocked that the general staff has not revolted as a result of the way this is being handled, because in World War II, you talk about the people going through lots of danger to get their mail. Well, back in World War II, we had special bombing missions to drop mail on people. We had, so that they could get their mail. There were munitions in our stockpiles, 155-millimeter mortar shells that were designed to carry mail.
Amazing.
So that we could get mail to people who were in pockets where you couldn't get to them.
But see, that wouldn't be profitable for Halliburton, Ben.
I would love to tell you what I think about Halliburton, but you'd lose your license to broadcast, huh?
Yeah, okay. Ben, thanks for the call and thanks for your comment. Jerry, you were speaking last week, I think. You mentioned to me earlier with John Conyers and Maxine Waters about...
Just Tuesday, this Tuesday, Maxine Waters and a few other Congress people sponsored a house briefing for Military Families Speak Out, and about 10 of us traveled to Washington, D.C. To speak to members of Congress and express, I really think what we wanted to most express to us, while we wanted to share our view of what's happening in Iraq and to promote our Bring Them Home Now campaign, to really tell the Congress people that we've counted on them before the war happened and throughout this whole time, and as far as I'm concerned, they're the ones who had the power to step in and do something about this, and still do, and a lot of them just haven't. And some of these people, I know what they probably think about this war, and I just really don't understand. In my own presentation, what I decided to talk about, and this is a perfectly true story, was I went to Germany before the war started, as Cody was deploying, in part because he was getting married and I went to his wedding, but also to try to find a way for him to separate from the army and just refuse to go. He did not want to participate in this, not out of really concern for his life, but because he thought it was wrong to invade Iraq in such a way and cause such death and destruction, and did not want to be part of it. And the only thing that he would see as an alternative was speaking to a congressperson. He really had great faith that Congress would step in and prevent this from happening, and I think many people did. Certainly I did. I mean, I spent so much time urging others to write their congresspeople, and I did so myself, and it's just puzzling to me that very few of them actually did, and those that did, it was more in an individual way. I haven't seen, such as in Britain, where you can clearly see there's an organized opposition to Blair's policies. I don't see that here, and other people around the world just don't understand what's going on in this country. And I really think that's why I went to Washington and why the rest of us went there, was to get our message to Congress that, the time of being afraid is over.
There is an organized opposition here, Jerry, and you're part of it. It's just that it's not getting very much press.
Well, I think that we've got a lot of press in the past few weeks, but, we don't have the power to actually do something. This is a democracy. There's a political system, and there's a certain procedure that is set up to prevent such things like this is happening, and I think it completely broke down. I understand the atmosphere in this country since 9/11 has been quite unusual, and that many people have just not known what to do and have been afraid of speaking out. You know, and this is why we've decided to do this. I mean, people need to stop being afraid. I don't know whether they're afraid of terrorists or the Bush administration. It's really difficult to judge what people are afraid of, especially the Congress people. But, right. You know, fear is not going to get us anywhere. You know,
yeah. Jerry, tell us about Military Families Speak Out.
How do we learn
more about this?
Military Families Speak Out was really organized by two families last November who ran into each other and found that they all agreed that this war should not happen and wanted to start doing something to prevent it, and really believed, as I do, that as families of people in the military, that we have a special viewpoint and a special voice to speak with in this matter, because you know, we totally oppose this war, primarily because we think it was wrong to invade the Iraqi people and to cause such destruction to them. And to see our own loved ones used to do this, it's just unthinkable. It's just...
But Jerry, the Bush administration and their apologists on the right say, oh, but Saddam was such a terrible man. You know, when George Bush Sr. Encouraged that uprising in the South and then didn't support the Shiites, Saddam went in and murdered thousands of them, and you can find them in those mass graves. I mean, he was a terrible guy.
You know, I don't think there's any disagreement that Saddam Hussein was a terrible man, but I think that it was quite publicized that there was probably other ways to deal with this that would not have harmed the Iraqi people in such a way. You know, I'm sorry. I mean, this was coming from the United Nations. It was all out there. You know, the information was available. There were many questions about information that Bush and Blair had on the weapons of mass destruction. And this was a completely unnecessary war, and millions of people all over the world believed that and knew that before it happened.
Yeah, and spoke out about it.
Why our leaders now, some of them have said, well, we believed the Bush administration. Well, I don't know why, because I didn't.
Yeah, Jerry, one of the folks in our chat room suggests that we're under martial law now. Just look around. People are terrified. The Patriot Act, Ashcroft, you know, people are afraid to speak out. I know that we were going to speak with another person on this program, whose family is involved in Iraq, and they were afraid to come on. It's bizarre. Are you suggesting, first of all, how do people find out about your organization on the internet? Is there a URL?
Sure. We have, actually, there's two websites for Military Families Speak Out, and I encourage anyone who has people in the military who are either in Iraq or who could possibly end up in Iraq to contact us. The site is www.mfso.org.
MFSO, as in Military Families Speak Out.
Yes.
.org.
And our Bring Them Home Now campaign also has a site. The information on there, there's news and all kinds of other information that's changed daily, and that is www.bringthemhomenow.org.
Bring Them Home Now is kind
of a joint project between Military Families Speak Out and Veterans for Peace and a few other veterans groups.
Right.
Unfortunately, some of the members of Veterans for Peace are also members of Military Families Speak Out because their kids are in Iraq.
Yeah, Jerry, the when you say bring them home now, my understanding is you oppose Congress giving George Bush $87 billion and suggest that would force him into a situation where we'd have to withdraw our troops. Do you really think that would be the best thing for the United States and for Iraq and for our position around the world?
Yes, I do.
Why?
You know, if I thought that Cody was over there as part of a program to rebuild Iraq and help the Iraqi people, then, you know, even though he really wants to come home and I really want him home, I'd say, fine, this is the responsibility of the United States to do that. The Bush administration has shown that they're completely incompetent and a failure. as long as there are U.S. soldiers there as an occupying force, this violence will continue, and as far as I'm concerned, it will get worse. And this harms not only our soldiers, but the Iraqi people. The Iraqi people are the ones who have suffered the most loss of life and who are suffering now and continues to suffer. And the soldiers do not want to be an occupying force. A lot of them can't believe that their government would ask them to function as this.
Yeah.
This is supposed to be a democracy. The United States is supposed to be spreading democracy around the world, not occupying other countries with their military.
Right.
You know,
Jerry Reed of Military Families Speak Out. It's 15 minutes before the hour. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Jerry, what would you suggest then does your organization have a position on this? And if not, then, you know, I'm curious what your personal thoughts are. Assuming that you've thought this through and beyond just, you know, the concerned mother's point of view, but, you know, as in terms of geopolitics, if we were to pull our soldiers out, I mean, when we pulled out of Vietnam, there was a vacuum that was immediately filled by the North Vietnamese. If we were to pull out of Iraq, what do you think would happen?
This is my position, and I'll explain to you, we're a very diverse group. There are a lot of different ideas about what should happen. We all do believe that, yes, there has to be some type of international assistance given to the Iraqi people with the goal of restoring Iraqi sovereignty as soon as possible. But obviously, you know, by using this method to topple Saddam Hussein, it left a great void, and this was well known beforehand. You know, I think that we're not policymakers. We're not international policymakers. Bring them home now is more of a goal, and it's intended to push the policymakers that they need to come up with a plan. You know, my own personal opinion has been, well, the United Nations, while not perfect, is what we've got, and the United Nations troops need to go into Iraq and take over the leadership, not the United States military. But since the bombing of the UN building and some analysis that I've read since then, which, you know, pointed out that there are problems with the UN being in Iraq, mainly because they continue to support the sanctions, which have really hurt the Iraqi people for many years.
Right.
You know,
well, there's
I'm
also
not
the
so
problem
sure
that we want to hang on to the
thing.
Oil. Yeah, there's also the problem that we want to hang on to the oil. Jerry, thank you very much for being on the program today. I appreciate it. One more time, www.mfso.org is the website, or bringthemhomenow.org. These are the two websites for your group. Is that correct?
Yes.
Great. Thank you. Jerry Reed of Military Families Speak Out. Thank you so much for being on the program. I appreciate your coming on today. The Judicial Watch Organization, who many view as, you know, toxic on the right because they helped bring down, or to the extent that Bill Clinton was brought down, they helped try to bring down Bill Clinton. They certainly helped the Republicans scramble his efforts to stop al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden in as much as his presidency for the better part of a year was, almost 2 years really, was completely distracted by this Lewinsky thing. And Judicial Watch was the group that started the first lawsuit on this. They were the ones who initiated the first lawsuit and made this happen in the Jennifer Flowers case, as I recall, and or Paula Jones, one or the other. And they have now sued Dick Cheney. And there's two interesting lawsuits the Judicial Watch has done. The first, which relates to what Jerry was just talking about, they sued Dick Cheney for wanting to find out what was going on back before 9/11. We're talking back in the spring of 01, just a few months after these guys took power in Washington, D.C. Dick Cheney was meeting in private, in secret, in our government buildings, with Exxon, Halliburton, Mobil, I guess Exxon Mobil is one company now. Anyway, with all these oil companies and big power companies, they were having these private meetings and they were developing the energy policy for the United States of America. And Judicial Watch, Larry Klayman, he says, what's going on? This is, we are the people, and you're developing our national policy, and you're not going to let us see what your documents are. You're not going to let us hear what was said. So they sued Larry Klayman, Judicial Watch. JudicialWatch.org is the website. He sued. And so far, the documents that have come out, which you can find on the Judicial Watch website, although you have to dig a little bit. There's so much stuff on there right now. They have found the one of the documents that they have found is a collection of maps. This came out of the Cheney meeting. These guys sat down with a map of Iraq and identified all of the oil wells, all the known oil wells, and they're all named and they're all listed, and there's something like close to 100 of them on there. And then there are the large region of Iraq over by the border with Kuwait that hasn't been explored, and they parceled that up into parcels. As I recall, there were 8 of them. And then there's this list of corporations, oil companies around the world, and their national affiliations that were potential customers for the oil in Iraq. So we see that before 9/11, CEO executive Dick Cheney and oil CEO Dick Cheney and oil CEO George W. Bush were meeting with other oil CEOs or their representatives to parcel up the oil supplies of Iraq. Now Judicial Watch has sued again. They don't have the documents on this one yet, but they point out, and I quote from their page, Judicial Watch is aggressively pursuing the disclosure of the facts and the decision for White House staff and President Bush to begin taking Cipro nearly a month before anthrax was discovered on Capitol Hill. Did you hear that reported in the news? This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation, but how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Hi, Tom Baudet for Motel 6. Well, I've noticed a lot of middle-aged corporate types on motorcycles trying to recapture a rebellious youth they never really had. They hit the highway like a bat out of accounting, but all they seem to be rebelling against is a full head of hair. But they can still call 1-800-4-MOTEL-6 for a place to rest and brush any dirt off their brand new leathers. I'm Tom, born to be mild Baudet, and we'll leave the light on for you. An Accor Hotel.
This is Dr. Danny. Paul, you're on the air.
Hey, Dr. Danny.
Hey.
Man, listen, we're having a hard time potty training our son.
Well, that's a common problem. How old is your boy?
He's 26.
Paul, I have some bad news. At this age, potty training will be near impossible.
You kidding me?
No, but Paul, I do have some good news.
All right, man. What?
I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
When we bought this house, I really loved all the open space nearby.
Me too.
Too bad our real estate agent never mentioned what they had planned for that space.
More!
Yeah, too bad.
Want to find the right real estate agent for you? At LendingTree.com, you choose from up to 4 agents certified by LendingTree and get up to a $2,000 gift card. Call 1-800-555-TREE. That's 1-800-555-TREE or visit LendingTree.com. Equal housing opportunity. Some restrictions may apply. See website for details.
Thieves in High Places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better, and he's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places. A ray of hope in these dark days and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
Look, if you had the chance to date Anna Nicole Smith, would you?
I found her appealing a few years ago, but there were things about her that intrigued me. That's all. I mean, I don't always get intrigued
by
them.
I just can't believe you, of all people, would choose a date based simply on the physical.
I hate to disappoint you.
You're a dirty dog.
On the IE America Radio Network.
You've got your green alligators and long-necked geese, humpty-back camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, Don't you forget that unicorn.
Sunday nights, please, please listen to our show, because if you, you don't, Mark will not stop singing. Animal Talk, Sunday nights, on the IE America Radio Network.
Show.
Gizmo's back on the line in Tucson, Arizona.
First off, I'd like to tell you I'm on Sirius Radio 145 Left and say hi to my other trucker buddies out there that listen to you, Kodiak and James. And
great.
I pulled this 18-wheel car over the side of the road to speak with you. I've read a couple articles that suggested that Bush Sr., had he gotten a second term, would have followed pretty much the same lines to go to war with Iraq. I'm wondering if there wasn't some kind of conspiracy all the way back to the 2000 election to get Jr. in so he could go ahead and fulfill the plans designed for their father in his second term. I enjoy your program. You're very informative, and I've learned a lot from listening to you, and I appreciate your program, Tom, so keep it up.
Well, thank you, Gizmo. That's very kind of you, and thanks for pulling the 18-wheeler off to the side. I didn't realize you were driving a truck. That's remarkable.
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
It's Tom Hartman in the Democracy Zone here on the IE America Radio Network. Is ABC News going to get, well, I don't think they put a corporation in jail, but what kind of trouble is it? John Ashcroft and Tom Ridge are all bent out of shape. Bent out of shape because ABC News shipped, and they did this last year. They did the same thing with this exact same piece of uranium. They shipped a piece of depleted uranium, and depleted uranium is somewhere between 40 and 60% as radioactive as regular uranium, so it's still uranium. And it's still radioactive, and you still can measure it with a Geiger counter. They shipped depleted uranium from Jakarta, Indonesia to Los Angeles. A year ago, they did the same thing by shipping a batch of it to Staten Island, New York, into the port. And this time they shipped it into the port of Los Angeles to demonstrate that this administration that wants to spend $87 billion helping Halliburton rebuild Iraq has not wanted to spend much on port security here in the United States. Of course, port security, gee, you might have to deal with well-paid people who are in unions. Over in Iraq, they can hire, as Jerry pointed out, they can hire pretty much anybody, and they're bringing in cheap labor folks from cheap labor countries. Of course, cheap labor is the mantra for the conservatives. Cheap labor this, cheap labor that. Anyhow, 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Brad in Pacifica, California. Brad, I've got about a half a minute here left in this segment, but if you want to hang on, we'll take the rest of your call after the top of the hour. Are you there? No, maybe not. We'll have Brad hang on. Charles Grassley had to write a letter to Attorney General John Ashcroft and to Tom Ridge saying, "Time and again, I find federal agencies devoting enormous time and energy to attacking whoever put the spotlight on a government mistake." It turns out that this is going to be on primetime Thursday, apparently. It's going to air tonight, a report by Brian Ross. Shipping 15 pounds of lead-encased uranium in a teak trunk, along with furniture from Jakarta, Jakarta, Indonesia, a terrorist hotspot, one of the places where Al-Qaeda is very active. Now, it turns out that shipping depleted uranium is not in and of itself a crime. But failing to disclose the contents of a package is a crime. And that's the crime that they're charging them with. They didn't fill out the customs declaration right. And ABC's answer is, you think terrorists are going to fill out a form saying they're shipping uranium? I mean, that's the whole point. That's the whole point of this thing. What is happening with these folks? This thing is just, it's just melting down. It's absolutely melting down. Democracy in America, I believe that we are facing a crisis for democracy here in the United States. It's just about exactly the hour here, 30 seconds before, on the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. And Brad is back. Brad, come on on. This is Tom Hartman on IE. Okay, we're gonna have to hold you until after the break. I don't know what happened. I was expecting the break to come up here about a half a minute ago. Anyhow, this is the vast radical conspiracy on the Tom Hartman radio program. Take no imitations and stay tuned. We'll be back right after the news.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Tom Roberts. On the second anniversary of 9/11, New York Senator Chuck Schumer says New York City has bounced back. Lisa Romanello reports.
Schumer says he thinks about the friends he lost in the attacks, but also how far we've come.
Some writer wrote that the world breaks us in places, but we grow back stronger over the break. That's true of New York City. We are vital. We have bounced back. If anything, we're closer to one another than we have been before.
And Schumer says the idea that terrorists could break this city was wrong. Lisa Romanello at Ground Zero in New York.
Four stained glass windows will serve as a living memorial to those who lost their lives in the attacks on the Pentagon 2 years ago. At today's memorial service at the Chapel of the Nation's Military Nerve Center, Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld quoted poet Ralph Waldo Emerson as he spoke of the United States and how it came to be.
What makes a nation's pillars high and its foundation strong? Not gold, but only men can make a people great and strong.
2 years ago today, roughly 9:43 a.m. Eastern Time, American Airlines Flight 77 crashed into the Pentagon building in Arlington, Virginia. Nearly 200 military employees and civilians lost their lives in that attack. The U.S. and its key allies have been working to get Russia and South Africa to back a U.N. resolution on Iran's nuclear energy program. The resolution would give Tehran until the end of October to prove it has no secret nuclear weapons program. Roxana Saberi reports from Tehran.
Diplomats from France and Germany have been holding closed-door talks with countries on the International Atomic Energy Agency's Board of Governors. They're trying to get them to support a resolution giving Iran a final chance to show it's complying with its nuclear obligations. Iran says it has been complying. If the board finds that it has not been, Tehran could face economic sanctions. Diplomats have said it's important to have Moscow support any resolution passed by the board. Russia has been helping Tehran to build a nuclear power plant in the south of Iran. Roxana Saberi, Tehran.
More in a moment.
Save a place for me. Save a space for me. In your heart.
Kids grow up and kids dream. Some dream of going to college. Dreams the United Negro College Fund helps make real. But for every deserving student we help, there's one we can't. Not without the funds. Please help us ensure there will be a place for everyone with a dream.
Save a place for me.
Please support the United Negro College Fund. A mind is a terrible thing to waste. Call 1-800-332-UNCF.
A message from the Ad Council.
Bells rang out at Flight 93 Memorial Chapel in Pennsylvania at 10:06 a.m. Eastern Time for the victims of those who perished on that United passenger jet on 9/11/2001. During today's service, each victim's name was read and the ceremony ended with God bless Flight 93, God bless America. 9/11 victims are being remembered today in Boston as well. A flag-raising ceremony was conducted at the State House this morning in honor of those killed. The two planes that crashed into the World Trade Center took off from Boston's Logan Airport the morning of the attacks. More after this.
And we're playing all your favorites, but right now I have a pair of free tickets to tonight's big concert for the third caller. Oh, let's go to the phone lines. They are heating up, and let's see. Hello.
Hello.
Is this Ms. Shannon Johnson?
Yes, yes it is.
Oh, you sound very excited.
I am.
Well, Ms. Johnson, I have good news.
I'm the third caller.
No, I just saved a load of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
The ACLU lawsuit over California's recall election has its day in court today. A panel of judges from the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals will decide whether to delay the state's October 7th gubernatorial election. Pope John Paul II is scheduled to spend 4 days in Slovakia. However, the fatigued pontiff was unable to complete a speech and called over a Slovak priest to continue the reading. It's been snowing in Utah this week. Snowbird has gotten 6 inches of the white stuff. Spokeswoman Laura Schaefer says early snow is good because it prepares the ground with moisture so that when the real snow starts to fall in November, the ground will already be frozen and ready to build up a snow base. The snow also pumps up the enthusiasm in snow sports for the coming season.
As the snow falls from here on out, it will have that sort of layer underneath that will allow that base to create quicker. And, you know, I mean, the snow up top was pretty substantial.
Schaefer doesn't expect the snow to stick around long, though. I'm Tom Roberts, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Yesterday, in Brakes 101, master cylinders, calipers, and pads were demystified. You learned they are a lot like hearts, muscles, and skin. All designed to stop cars and save lives. When I come back, it's Brakes 102. Hi, I'm Bobby Likas. Every summer, callers on the Car Clinic Network ask what's causing that odor when I turn on my air conditioner. And the answer? Bacterial growth in the AC system. The good news is there's an ingenious process from BG Products that cleans and disinfects your entire ventilation system without having to dismantle it. You'll breathe easier with a BG ventilation service, and your car will smell like new. To find a shop that performs this service, go to bgfindashop.com. That's bgfindashop.com. Welcome to Brakes 102 at Car Clinic College. Today's lesson, analog braking systems, or ABS. Ever press the brake and nothing? You just pumped and hoped for the best? Hope no more. The best is here. Computer-controlled ABS. This system monitors the speed of individual wheels and applies precise braking power to each. And if any brake starts to lock or slows at a different rate than the others, that specific brake is automatically pumped or pulsed to prevent lockup. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting live coast to coast on terrestrial radio stations, on Stream 145 on the Sirius satellite radio system, and on the internet at radiopower.org, ieamericaradio.com, live365.com, and with archives at whiterosesociety.org. You can find it all at tomhartman.com. Before I get into this, we have a guest. I've got a comment I want to open it with, but we also have Brad in Pacifica who had called just before the last break, and I tried to bring him in, and we lost him. And so, Brad, thank you for hanging on over the break, and welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi. Can you hear me?
I can, Brad. How's life in Pacifica, California, and what's up?
Well, it's good to talk to you again. I called a couple months ago.
Great.
The reason I called was in regard to the Michael Meacher article in The Guardian last Saturday.
Yes. This war is bogus.
I'm sorry?
He said this war is bogus, as I recall. Yeah. Is that the headline?
Exactly. Okay. Not just Iraq, but Afghanistan, the whole war on terror.
Yeah, that it was all a power grab on the part of the neocons with their imperial aspirations. I'm familiar with his argument.
Excellent. Well, what I wanted to point out was, I mean, this is not just some random person. He's, you know, he's currently a minister of parliament, and until June was the environmental minister for the Blair government to leave.
He was in the cabinet. He was in Blair's cabinet for years. Yeah, yeah. This would be the equivalent of in the United States, somebody who was both a member of the House of Representatives and, say, the Secretary of the EPA, who held both positions, coming out and saying that England's only reason for participating in the Iraqi war was to restore the British Empire.
Well, he also talked a bit about 9/11,
right.
Which I thought was very intrinsic to how we, you know, perceive the war on terror and how it's been allowed to go forward.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And Brad, let me come back to this in a little bit, if I may, if you could call back a little later on, because I do want to move along into we have a guest on the line holding, and I want to take this. I appreciate your call and thanks for your comments. So I first wanted to set this up, but back in a week after, on September 12th, the day after 9/11. The Pope issued a message. He said, "With deeply felt sympathy, I address myself to the beloved people of the United States in this moment of distress and consternation, when the courage of so many men and women of goodwill is being sorely tested." I'm reading this, by the way, from the book From the Ashes. "In a special way, I reach out to the families of the dead and the injured and assure them of my spiritual closeness. I entrust to the mercy of the Most High the helpless victims of this tragedy for whom I offered Mass this morning, invoking upon them eternal rest. May God give courage to the survivors. May He sustain the rescue workers and the many volunteers who are presently making an enormous effort to cope with such an immense emergency. I ask you, dear brothers and sisters, to join me in a prayer for them. Let us beg the Lord that the spirit, that the spiral of hatred and violence will not prevail." And then the next page in this book, a letter to the President of the United States from the Dalai Lama, written that same week. "I am deeply shocked by the terrorist attacks that took place involving four apparently hijacked aircraft and the immense devastation these caused. It is a terrible tragedy that so many innocent lives have been lost. It may seem presumptuous on my part, but I personally believe we need to think seriously whether a violent reaction is the right thing to do. And in the greater interest of the nation and the people in the long run, I believe violence will only increase the cycle of violence." I am very pleased and honored to have on our program today Adele Welty, a member of September 11 Families for Peaceful Tomorrow. Adele lost her son Timmy, a fireman, on September 11th at the World Trade Center. Adele, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Thank you.
I'm sure I echo the sentiments of all of our listeners in expressing our shared sorrow about the loss of your son and his comrades and all the other people who vanished that day or who were harmed or killed and many so many injured as well.
It's a difficult day for all of us.
I'm sure it is. Tell us about your group, Peaceful Tomorrow, September 11 Families for Peaceful Tomorrows.
On September 11, Families for Peaceful Tomorrows was organized shortly after September 11th by a group of people who lost family members on 9/11 and who did not want war to be waged in the names of their family members. At that time, the bombing of Afghanistan was in the works, and they got in touch with each other. Rita Lazar had written a letter to the New York Times expressing her fear that a wave of violence would be unleashed that could never be called back.
Mm-hmm.
They then began to organize and speak out against going to war in Afghanistan to no avail. And a few months later, they traveled to Afghanistan after the bombing to reach out to victims and families that had survived the bombing and express the compassion that they felt for the pain the Afghan people were experiencing at that time. And subsequently, they've been asked to speak at various peace rallies and have written a number of articles to help spread the word that violence in the name of those that died on September 11th should not reflect the way we feel as family members.
Yeah. Now, Adele, I think maybe many people have forgotten because our media certainly don't talk about it, and in all of the flag waving that was on television last night and throughout the day yesterday and what will be, I'm sure, today, many people forget the fact that in just before the bombing of Afghanistan began, that the Afghan government, the Taliban, had actually offered to give us Osama bin Laden. And not to give them directly to the United States, but to give them to a third nation, where he could be held for trial, he could be interrogated. It could put an end to Al Qaeda, and we turned him down. Was that about the time that this group was formed?
I'm not sure of the exact time frame because I did not come in contact with Peaceful Tomorrows until January of this year. When we had the peace rally in January in Washington, and subsequently on February 15th, when the whole world joined in a call for peace.
Adele, we're speaking with Adele Welty, a member of September 11 Families for Peaceful Tomorrows. Adele, would you like to, or would you prefer not to? I could understand either way. How you know this must be a very difficult day for you. Telling us a little bit about your son, who died at the World Trade Center.
Timmy was a firefighter. He was 34 years old. He had been a firefighter since 1993. He was married. He had two children, Jake, who was almost four on September 11th, and Julia, who had been born the month before. She was born August 7th of 2001. So she will only know her dad through our memories.
Yes.
Timmy was a superb athlete. His athleticism was directed towards the fire department. He was on the fire department hockey team and skiing team and the volleyball team that won a bronze medal at the World Games in Indiana that year. He was also a master carpenter and had just started a home improvement business on the side in his spare time.
A good man. Adele, what is your hope here? What in the name of your son, what are you working toward by your participation with this group and by speaking out, being on, for example, being on this program?
A recognition and acceptance of our common humanity. One of the astronauts that was lost in the space shuttle disaster had radioed back that from the vantage point that they were in space, they looked at a planet that had no borders.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if we all could look at the Earth that way and embrace each other's common humanity and understand that other people suffer the same way that we do, that they love and they have hopes for the future just the way we do, and not think that because people come from a different culture or have a different value system than we do, that they don't feel the way we do or have the same hopes for the future. If we could really understand that, I don't think we'd want to kill them.
Yeah. Adele, first of all, the group Peaceful Tomorrows, this advocacy organization founded by family members of 9/11 victims, how can people find more information about this group on the internet?
We have a website. Type in peacefultomorrows.com, and any family member from 9/11 can join. There's no fee for joining, just the expression that you want to join. It's an advocacy group, but in many ways, we're also supporting each other through the emotional trauma.
Yeah, it's got to be a difficult one, and I salute you. I am very grateful to you for having come on our program and shared your perspective with us and letting people know about peacefultomorrows.com, not .org. .com. Is that right?
Oh my goodness, I'm not even sure.
Yeah, sometimes it's .org. People can check it out very easily.
Do a Google search for Peaceful Tomorrows.
Yeah. There you go. Thank you, Adele Welty. Thank you very much for being on our program today. I appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
It's very kind of you. Thank you for taking this time today. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Talk radio for the rest of us. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Remember the good old days?
Yeah, when was that?
2003, of course, when interest rates were at historic lows and we knew the economy was turning around. What an historic opportunity. We really jumped on it. How'd you do?
Well, we
needed to expand our manufacturing and warehousing, so we called General Steel Corporation and ordered buildings engineered for our area and to meet our needs. And with the stucco and rock products provided by the General, our buildings look great.
How will you look back at this historic opportunity? Small business owners know that now is the best time to build that new warehouse, manufacturing, or retail space. Whether you need a 60 by 200 foot building for under $50,000 or a 100 by 175 for under $98,000, call toll free 1-866-96-DEAL. If you need to expand your business, you need the General. If your church or school needs to build quickly and save money, you need the General. Call 1-866-96-DEAL. If you need space, you need the General. Call 1-866-96-DEAL today.
Looking for a different way to get relief from sore muscles or achy joints? Now you can get fast, targeted relief from a name you trust. Try new Bare Muscle and Joint Cream. It targets the pain precisely. Just rub it in right where it hurts. New Bare Muscle and Joint Cream actually increases circulation at the site of pain to soothe that achy soreness fast. Take aim at the pain with a name you trust. Try new Bare Muscle and Joint Cream and get moving again, pain-free. Use as directed.
The people who brought you The Weekend, Michigan's unions, invite you to Labor Fest, a party for working families and our communities. Come to Ford Field, downtown Detroit, this Saturday, September 13th, noon to 6. It's free admission and includes tries for Guinness World Records, the world's largest picnic, and the world's largest postcard. Your kids can have an NFL player experience, enjoy marching bands, meet sports celebrities, and we have $5 Tiger tickets. Join us this Saturday, September 13th, free admission at the Detroit Lions Ford Field for the world's largest labor picnic.
For more info, go to miaflcio.org.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into Tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
I would like to see a law that says your organs automatically get donated unless you say no.
All right, Richie, have you got an organ donor specification?
No.
Why?
Because I don't want them taking me before I'm dead.
In Richie's case, what good would most of those organs be?
Certainly won't be going for his brain. Or they might, because it's never been used.
You might as well be dead. Your brain is, so why not the rest of you?
On the IE America Radio Network.
I'm calling about the Michael Malloy program. You know, the reason I turned this man off.
Why?
Is because he sounds like an 8-year-old.
Me?
Name calling.
I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not.
You should get somebody who at least has some intelligence.
No, don't fire me. No. I got kids in college.
The Michael Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time, on IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
It's Tom Hartman, talk radio for the rest of us here on the IE America Radio Network. Why was it necessary to enact legislation to curb civil protections as a result of 9/11? I have traveled all over the world. I've spent an awful lot of time in the third world. Those of you who've listened for a while know that or read any of my books know that for 25 years, I have worked as an international relief worker on and off with an organization based in Germany, Kinder Nugent Hilfsvirk Salom, and with a program here in the United States, the New England Salem Children's Village, which my wife and I started. And we, wherever I go in the third world, what I see over and over again is that those governments that have the most repressive laws are the ones that are trying to protect themselves from their own people. Think about it for a minute. Why would a government need to clamp down? It's always because they are afraid of their own people. And when their own people are united and with them, they will turn in the folks in their midst who are doing, to use George Bush's word, evil. This was the debate that was happening in the 1780s when they were putting together the Constitution, and John Adams, who later had his way in 1798 when he passed the Alien and Sedition Acts that made it illegal to speak against the President of the United States. John Adams had always taken the position that we need to control people, because if we don't control them, they will cause havoc and they will speak poorly of the government. And then people will say, oh, no, that's terrible. And they might even change our government and God only knows what will happen and quack, quack, quack. And Jefferson said, hey, wait a minute. Trust the people. If we, the government, are doing well by our people, then our people will do everything they can to make we, the government, successful, because we are the people. And the minute that we stop being we the people, then we deserve to change. Then we deserve the criticisms that are pointed at us. And John Adams said, no, it can't be like that. And, you know, ended up passing the Alien and Sedition Acts, the first iteration of the Patriot Act in 1798. First thing he did, in fact, even before the law was effective, John Adams threw into jail, as soon as he had signed the law, but before it took effect, he threw into jail Benjamin Franklin's grandson, Benjamin Franklin Bach, who was the publisher of a newspaper, as I recall it was called the Aurora, that had spoken poorly of John Adams. Why do we have to have laws that curb civil protections when we say that we're doing it to save civil protections? I'm telling you, a government that is paranoid, a government that is afraid of its own people, a government that operates in secret, a government that refuses to tell people what it's up to, a government that it creates a shadow government. Do you know we have a shadow government? There's a shadow president, a shadow vice president, shadow members of Congress. There is a shadow government. This is not conspiracy nut stuff. I'm talking New York Times reports. In case everybody gets killed, but we're not allowed to know anything about it. Why was the White House, why was George Bush taking CPRO a month before the anthrax attacks? They don't want to talk about it. It's secret. What was Dick Cheney talking about in those energy media? It's secret. I'm telling you, when the government starts telling we, the people, that it's none of our business, we have a problem. We have a real problem. That is not American democracy. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm John Hamilton.
A large coalition involving some 80 human rights groups published a report on Colombia Monday. In it, they accused the Colombian government of moving away from democratic principles and toward authoritarian rule. The examples cited include the military's tacit backing of some right-wing paramilitary death squads who've been implicated in the murder of hundreds of trade unionists. Colombia's president, Alvaro Uribe, immediately denounced the accusations, going so far as to directly tie the coalition behind the report to terrorism. Human rights workers in Colombia now believe the president's remarks may give the right-wing paramilitaries more justification for targeting them as well. 17 human rights workers were killed in Colombia last year.
A Bush administration plan to roll back the 40-hour work week was dealt a serious blow in the Senate yesterday. Senators narrowly adopted an amendment that blocks plans by the Labor Department to reclassify millions of workers as exempt from overtime pay. Democrat Tom Harkin of Iowa sponsored the amendment. The Economic Policy Institute estimates the Labor Department's proposal would spell an end to time and a half pay for a net 8 million Americans, people like Carol Bragg of Gaithersburg, Maryland. She's a cardiac care nurse who says that U.S. nurses, on average, put in more than 300 hours of overtime per year.
Without overtime protections, employers could demand us to work long, hard hours.
The fight over the 40-hour work week now heads to the House of Representatives, which narrowly defeated a measure similar to the Harkin Amendment earlier in the summer.
Striking workers at Yale are digging in for the long haul. They're getting $100 raises in their weekly strike pay, up from $150 to $250 a week, thanks to donations from community groups, churches, and Yale students and faculty.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Animal Talk, helping you with your pets and talking to celebrities like Ted Nugent.
Everybody's got to learn to support hunting, fishing, and trapping because that's where the dollars come from to save habitat.
You know, every time he gets done talking, I feel like I should say amen.
But, because I live the truth. That's what Michael, God, Guns, and Rock and Roll. It's on the New York Times bestseller list. It sounds like I'm bragging because I am.
I love the book, Ted.
Thank you. It's like we're at a damn campfire, isn't it?
Animal Talk, Saturdays and Sundays on the IE America Radio Network.
Greetings, everybody. This is Ramsey Pollard Jr., the host of IE America's Sunday afternoon travel show, Ramblin' with Ramsey, on air 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Almost every Sunday, I travel to some location to offer you the opportunity of not only receiving wonderful printed material about the location, but to win a prize, maybe a couple of nights in a hotel or a resort or T-shirts or fudge. Oh, yes, there's always a lot of fudge. Come on, tune us in on your radio or go to IEAmericaRadio.com. I'll be there.
We'll be right back.
best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Calm before the storm seemed to last a while there, didn't it? And then the storm came, and it is upon us, my friends. It is upon us. Shortly after taking office, speaking of the calm before the storm, shortly after taking office, this from globalresearch.ca. It's actually, I think they've reprinted it from unanswered questions.org. Shortly after taking office, John Ashcroft, sent a memo to department heads outlining his seven top priorities. Now, keep in mind, when the Bush administration came in, the Clinton administration going out told them that their number one priority needed to be stopping Osama bin Laden, that there were terrorists, and they had America in their sights. And Ashcroft sent out a memo to his department heads outlining his seven top priorities as attorney general. Was one of them counterterrorism? No. No, he was worried about dirty pictures. He was worried about people smoking pot and maybe medical marijuana. Two-star General Donald Carrick commented, quote, Clinton's advisors met nearly weekly on how to stop bin Laden. I didn't detect that kind of focus from the Bush administration, end quote. A June 29, 2002 AP story states, quote, President Bush's national security leadership met formally nearly 100 times in the months prior to the September 11 attacks, yet terrorism was the topic during only two of those meetings. How does this, you know, and then there's all this chatter, and within, what was it, 4 hours of the attacks, they were pinning this on bin Laden? How did they know? That wasn't time to send CIA agents out in the field. What does this have to do with Ashcroft's decision not to fly on commercial jets? And now we've got this, we've got a military, you know, the Carlyle Group, the Halliburton Company, back to this military-industrial complex. I got a couple callers here. If you can hang on just a minute, I just want to share this with our listeners. We have this situation where up until World War II, in the United States, there had never been a permanent armaments industry. We had never had a company that just made all its money off weapons. There were companies that came up during time of war. Prescott Bush's grandfather, whose name was Bush, I forget his first name, made money in the weapons industry in World War I, supplying Remington. And, of course, Prescott Bush made money in World War II, helping supply Hitler until he was shut down by Roosevelt. But it wasn't until really after World War II that a permanent arms industry was created. It was a brand new thing. The company, I mean, prior to that, General Motors could make cars, then a war comes along, they make tanks for a while. They go back to making cars. And as he was leaving office in 1961, General Dwight D. Eisenhower, President Dwight D. Eisenhower, commented about this situation. And I am very concerned about this. The billions, a billion is a thousand million, it's a million million. I'm sorry, a trillion is a billion is a thousand million, or a million thousand. You could do it either. Anyway, the billions of dollars that are being made by the military contractors in Iraq right now, this huge industry that has got so many of our elected officials, particularly among the Republicans who receive the disproportionate share of campaign contributions from this industry, has got them by the throat. Here's what Dwight Eisenhower had to say about that.
Now, this conjunction of an immense military establishment and a large arms industry is new in the American experience. The total influence, economic, political, even spiritual, is felt in every city, every state house, every office of the federal government. We recognize the imperative need for this development, yet we must not fail to comprehend its grave implications. Our toil, resources, and livelihood are all involved. So is the very structure of our society.
This is Eisenhower so clearly understood the consequences of this and the significance of this that if we started allowing industry, particularly a military industry, making our decisions. And here we have, you know, Wolfowitz, who's making money in the military-industrial complex as a consultant. What was it, $600,000? At the same time that he's planning the war in Iraq? And he's advising these companies, hey, the big profit's coming, guys. You remember that? I mean, it was in the newspapers for what, a day? And Eisenhower wrapped it up by saying that...
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes.
I would say that Dwight Eisenhower's greatest fears have come to pass. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. If you have a comment, question, whatever you'd like to say, Philip in Florida is on the line. Philip, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hi. I saw a movie the other night called, an old movie. It was called Is Paris Burning?
Mm-hmm.
And it was about the occupation of France, specifically Paris, during the Second World War. And the person who was in charge, the commandant, brings a guy into his office who is apparently a kind of a civic leader of sorts in Paris. And he says, I've had 115 of my men have been shot here in Paris. I want it to stop, and I want your help. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't help make a comparison to what was going on there and what's going on in Iraq. How many videos have you seen on television showing GIs knocking in people's doors?
Lots.
Do you think the German soldiers did the same thing in France, looking for saboteurs?
Looking
for people
for sure.
who had guns and weapons who were shooting German soldiers?
Yeah. Absolutely. And you know what's amazing is the Germans were taking heavy losses when they occupied France. I mean, the Vichy France, this is why, what's his name, who was the first president after World War II? De Gaulle.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he was, the whole resistance thing was huge, and they were killing Germans left and right throughout that occupation. There was a whole organized resistance. But you know how many American soldiers died after World War II, after the cessation of hostilities in Europe and in Japan combined?
Probably less than 20.
From the day that the treaties were signed until today, how many soldiers were killed by people, you know, terrorists, people trying to intentionally kill them? You think 20?
I don't even think 20.
The number was zero.
Oh, my gosh.
Not one. Now, remember the lie that Donald Rumsfeld told when he was on the news programs 2 weekends ago? He said, oh, well, after World War II, we had all these problems. We had all these. No, it's a lie. And then Condoleezza Rice comes on and she says, well, yeah. It's just wrong.
Well,
no, people get it when they're being occupied like the French did with the Germans versus when they're being liberated like the Germans did with the Americans. They get it.
And the Germans set up their own puppet government, of course, because they didn't have enough people to administer the entire country. I can't remember the guy's name, but he was handpicked, and he was a French citizen. I can't remember the guy's name, but you know, and that's what we did. We've handpicked the people to run it. Most of them from out of Iraq. What's the difference?
Yeah, no, this is a very big problem we have.
And tell me what the difference is between what the Soviets did in Afghanistan and what we're doing in Iraq. What? They handpicked an Afghan person to run Afghanistan, and then the Russian soldiers occupied it, and then they had people, guerrillas in the hills shooting at Russians, and the Russians are shooting back. Tell me what's the difference?
Yeah, it's from the point of view of the locals, I can tell you that there's no difference. I mean, in Afghanistan, I mean, they're back to the warlords now. The Taliban is back. Women are wearing burqas. They're doing honor killings of women who've been raped again. I mean, it is other than in Kabul, it is not that much different than it was before. And this story, of course, is now being reported, but in the administration, everybody's kind of trying to pretend.
But apparently there's been record harvests and shipments of heroin and opium to Europe and to Asia from Afghanistan.
It is the largest single opium crop in the history of the world. In the history of the world. And it's just absolutely incredible. The whole situation in Afghanistan, in my opinion, is on the edge of just spinning totally out of control. I've got a Rumsfeld clip here. I'm going to play just a little bit of it. I'm not sure. I may have to skip around in it. Let's see what he has to say here.
As we've seen in Iraq and Afghanistan, the dead enders are still with us. Those remnants of the defeated regimes who go on fighting long after their cause is lost. There are some today who are surprised that there are still pockets of resistance
pockets.
In Iraq.
Yeah, just a few.
And they suggest that this represents some sort of a failure on the part of the coalition. But this is not the case. Indeed, I suspect that some of you in this hall today, especially those who served in Germany during World War II, or in the period immediately after the war.
Now, at this point, all the World War II veterans in the audience are going to see their jaws drop to the floor when they hear this.
We're not surprised that some Ba'athists have kept on fighting. You will recall that some dead enders fought on during and after the defeat of the Nazi regime in Germany.
Simply not true.
Today, the Nazi dead enders are largely forgotten.
Yeah, because they didn't exist.
The sidelines of history. Because they comprised a failed resistance.
They comprised no resistance.
Kill our allied forces in a war that saw millions fight.
Yeah, this is incredible. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. Philip, thank you for the call, and thanks for your comments. Bill in Oklahoma's on the line. Bill, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hello.
Hey, Bill.
When 9/11 happened, my grandfather said that the way to get Osama would be for President Bush to go on a hunger strike. And at the time, I called him a fool, told him that I would never be able to get Osama, and we needed to go to Afghanistan. And, you know, my grandfather died about a year ago, and we still haven't found Osama. And
yeah.
I believe now that a response like that probably would have gotten a much better reaction from the rest of the world.
We had Bill. We had the whole world in our hand on 9/11. They were there were people in the streets in Baghdad in support of the United States. There were people on the streets in Syria. Le Monde, the French newspaper, ran a headline saying we are all Americans now. The Germans were out. Everybody. I mean, our traditional North Korea had a demonstration saying, you know, we're with you. We have sympathy for you. We had so much goodwill all around the world. And when you look back at the times when the world has turned, I mean, really substantial cultural changes when the world has turned, and this could have been one of those opportunities, you see that it has changed not because of wars, not because of bombs, not because of weapons, not because of violence, but because of ideas. About 2,000 years ago, it wasn't just Jesus. I mean, he was one of the main people who articulated it, but there was this whole movement to reform Judaism and get rid of the idea of stoning people to death for adultery or for speaking back against their parents and to end the animal sacrifices. And, of course, they ended. All of that ended. With the end of the fall of the Second Temple, was around 72 AD, as I recall. And the world changed. I mean, there was a transformation there. We saw this transformation that happened in Europe with the Enlightenment, with the Renaissance. We saw this transformation with the Protestant Reformation, the transformation. And Islam has not yet gone through that kind of a transformation. We've seen it, and not just Islam as a religion, but the Islamic culture has not gone through that kind of a transformation. Everywhere else on the planet it has. All the other cultures on the planet have modernized. Hinduism has gone through these changes. Buddhism, I'd say, started out this way. Judaism, Christianity, they've all gone through these changes, and there are only a few dead enders like Jerry Falwell still back in the 11th century among all these modern religions. And this could have been the turning point where if we had repudiated violence and we had pointed out to the world that this was an insane criminal act by a small band of insane criminals and had enlisted the aid of the world to chase them down as criminals, This could have been the thing that changed Islam forever, that brought Islam into the 21st century. Because Islam has not had its Protestant Reformation. They have not had that. They had not had the end of the Second Temple like the other major religions of the world have. And this could have been it. And we completely blew it. In fact, instead we said, okay, you want to have an 7th century response? We will come back at you with like the 11th century. And Bill, this president has completely failed, not just we in the United States, but the whole planet.
That's true.
Yeah, Bill, thanks for your call. Thanks, I appreciate your comments. I mean, this goes way beyond, hey, who knew what when? This, you know, would, is it was did Bush have advanced knowledge? Was, you know, who was, I mean, these are big questions. These are big questions. Why was the FBI pulled back? Why is Colleen Rowley told, don't investigate those Saudis? You know, why were we trying to protect George Bush and his father from being embarrassed because they're in bed with the Bin Laden family? I mean, yeah, it would have been bad press. They would have survived it. And these are legitimate questions. There's a whole bunch of very legitimate questions. Why haven't they tracked down the insider trading on the put options on American and United Airlines and the other companies that were involved in the World Trade Center? I mean, there were actually puts being sold on American Express, as I recall, and there was another company, I forget the name of it. Larry Klayman of Judicial Watch has even talked about treason in this regard. You know, why was it that Mohammed Atta, who received $100,000 wired to him by the Pakistani intelligence service, General Mahmoud was in charge of that. General Mahmoud, on 9/11, was having a meeting with Representative Porter Goss, Republican of Florida, and Senator Bob Graham, Democrat of Florida, the Senate Intelligence Committee. Why was this guy allowed to quietly retire? What are the Bush family's connections to Bin Laden? You know, the questions go on and on, but I think the biggest question that nobody's talking about is why did we blow this opportunity to actually create a peaceful world rather than bring about a worldwide Holocaust? Could it be perhaps even the idea that some of these people in leadership have that there needs to be one? I don't know. This is just a tragedy. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
The people who brought you the weekend, Michigan's unions, invite you to Labor Fest, a party for working families and our communities. Come to Ford Field, downtown Detroit, this Saturday, September 13th, noon to 6. It's free admission and includes tries for Guinness World Records, the world's largest picnic, and the world's largest postcard. Your kids can have an NFL player experience, enjoy marching bands, meet sports celebrities, and we have $5 Tiger tickets. Join us this Saturday, September 13th, free admission at the Detroit Lions Ford Field for the world's largest labor picnic.
For more info, go to miaflcio.org.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
This is Mike Malloy. Another year has passed since the attacks against us on September 11th, 2001. Another year and still the refusal of the Bush administration to investigate the massacre of 3,000 people on U.S. soil. Another year of killing authorized by the Bush administration of civilians in two countries who had absolutely nothing to do with the terrorism conducted against us. Another year marking the absolute failure of leadership of the Bush administration. How much longer until we, the citizens of this country, say enough? I'm Mike Malloy.
Joining us now is Jason Campbell with the Christian Action Network.
Well, since 1991, the gay movement has gone down to Disney to do these gay days. You've had events where you've had Mickey Mouse with Goofy in sexual positions.
Ah! Homosexual movies are shown on the Disney transportation systems. And what kind of movies, for God's sake, do they show on these buses?
Triple X.
Oh, you're kidding.
If a child's riding beside one of the buses and looks up and says, Daddy, what is that on the television monitor?
Right.
It's going to be an embarrassing moment.
Oh, it'll be worse than embarrassing. The child will be scarred for life.
Right. That's what the homosexuals want.
Well, I know. They're after the kids. Now, the only thing I'm afraid of is somebody just tuned in the program and never heard the program before and just went, oh, Jesus, this guy is really a right-wing freak.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, helping you with your pets and talking to celebrities, like from The Cosby Show and the Dr. Doolittle movies, Raven Simone. Do you have any pets of your own?
I do. I have two chinchillas and I have a big Briard.
Do you train your dog?
I don't. I just give him love and take him out, so he better love me because I have to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
So here you are, Charisse Doolittle, who talks to the animals, and you don't even train your own dog. Nothing but love.
Nothing but love. All they need is love.
Animal Talk, Saturdays and Sundays on the IE America Radio Network.
This is Mike Malloy with the IE America Radio Network. Want to know more about our talk shows and personalities but don't know where to look? Do you want to find out what guests are scheduled or what topics we'll be discussing on our programs? Would you like to participate in live chat or vote in interactive polls? All this and more is available at the IE America Radio website. Bookmark it, stop surfing, and get active. Visit www.ieamericaradio.com today.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
This land is your land, and this land is my land. From the California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me.
And welcome back. Pete Seeger there, the original version, This Land Is Your Land. I have a good friend who is Native American, a member of the Apache tribe in Arizona, who goes nuts every time he hears that song. I think that we need to remember that that situation exists. But nonetheless, here we are, and I think it's an important thing to have to care for our country. We this nation has been such a gift to the world so many times, and such a gift to its own citizens. I know I have benefited tremendously from being a citizen of this country, from being able to raise children in this country, from being able to work and create businesses in this country, to be able to being able to freely speak my voice, write my books, worship in the way that all of those things. I truly honor and love this nation, and that is the power of this nation. That is the extraordinary power of the United States. One of Pacecop in our chat room, he says, I think we're going through the same transformation that the Islamic culture already has. We're becoming a religious fundamentalist country. And then Tefar says, Pace, here, they truly think that the U.S. is a Christian country. And this is the great danger. Shall we even go backwards? I mean, I heard Bill O'Reilly the other day on his show. He opened his show by going, God is under attack. I'm sorry, Bill. My God is big enough that he doesn't worry about such things, or she or it. Under attack? Come on. If we hold up to the world a sacred archetype, if we say to the world, as we have for 227 years, we believe in freedom, we believe in liberty, we believe in the right of people to worship however they wish or not at all. We believe in absolute, absolute democracy within the constraints of a constitution, a constitutionally limited democratic republic, and it works. If we stand up for freedom and liberty, the rest of the world will stand up with us. And when we start getting paranoid and we start clamping down, the rest of the world will too. We need to take our country back, and we need to hold up the positive values that America has stood for all these years. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Our program today was produced by Louise Hartman here in Vermont and by Joe McPherson in Georgia and engineered by Shar Jones in Detroit. Thanks for joining us today, and tune in tomorrow, same time, same place.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Animal Talk, your animalogical super information highway about pets. Every Saturday and Sunday, we take your calls, help you with your pets, give away some prizes, and talk to celebrities, like, from Eight Is Enough, Dick Van Patten.
I've been listening to your show. It's fascinating. It's very interesting.
We're nuts, aren't we?
I can see why people would call you up. You really know what you're talking about. It's terrific. Very, very informative.
Uh-oh, we got him on the wrong channel.
Animal Talk, Saturday noon to 2, Sunday 7 to 9 p.m. on the IE America Radio Network.
Talk, not your father's radio program, take 47.
Tune into Animal Talk this Sunday.
Yeah!
Animal celebrity boxing.
We're gonna kick some butt!
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
What a cat!
And that dog on ice, Tonya Harding.
Tonya Harding, she'll fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Boy, come on!
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
This is Mike Malloy, and so here we are. 2 years have passed since a terrorist attack on U.S. soil left more than 3,000 people dead, U.S. citizens and citizens from dozens of other nations. During these 2 years, we and the world have waited for a full and factual investigation by the Bush administration, on whose watch this horrific crime occurred. We continue to wait. Not only has the Bush administration failed to conduct an official inquiry into this massacre, it has also attempted, successfully so far, to impede, delay, and ultimately halt any attempt to unravel the awful truths of September 11, 2001. We must ask why this administration has worked so long and so hard to kill any search for the truth.